He sure is. He sure is. I don't see our flags. We don't have the flags. We're not doing the Pledge of Allegiance with no flags. That's ridiculous.
Here it is back here.
Oh, is there? Oh, yeah. All right. Okay. We always start with the pledge, okay?
For sure.
Okay.
We're trying to blend our families.
Welcome to the first meeting of the newly merged ARB and CTC. Welcome to the first joint meeting of the California Air Resources Board and the California Transportation Commission. Is our sound system working?
Yes, ma'am.
Do people need to turn their microphones off if they're not speaking? Is that going to be important? Well, the noise went away. Okay, terrific. Welcome, everybody. And we're going to get started in just a second. It's our custom at ARB when we begin our board meetings to start by saying the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag. So I would appreciate it if all of you would join me in standing and face the flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Lucy sing the national. She has a beautiful voice.
I understand that we have a member of the Transportation Commission who could possibly lead us in the song, but we're not going to do that.
Next time,
Ms. Dunn, we will call on you. All right. Let's begin with a roll call. First for the CARB members, and then we'll turn it over to the chair of the California Transportation Commission to call the roll of the Transportation Commission. So, clerk of the Air Resources Board, please call the roll.
Dr. Balmes. Mr. De La Torre. Mr. Eisenhut.
Here.
Senator Flores. Assemblymember Garcia. Supervisor Joya.
Here.
Senator Laura. Ms. Mitchell.
Here.
Mrs. Rudin.
Here.
Supervisor Roberts. Supervisor Serna.
Here.
Dr. Sheriffs.
Here.
Professor Sperling.
Here.
Vice Chair Berg. Chair Nichols.
Here.
Madam Chair, we have a quorum.
Thank you. Then Chair Inman, would you please go ahead and do the roll call for your commissioners?
Okay, so I am going to call the roll for our commission. So Commissioner Alvarado.
Yes.
Commissioner Burke.
Here.
Commissioner Dunn.
Here.
Commissioner Arp.
Here.
Commissioner Gometti.
Here.
Commissioner Gardino.
Present.
Commissioner Inman's here. Commissioner Kehoe. Commissioner Madaffer.
Here.
Commissioner Tavoloni.
Here.
And Commissioner von Kneinenberg.
Here.
And ex officio member.
Here.
Assemblymember Frazier. And I don't see Senator Bell, but I'll call his name. I think he's joining us in a bit. So we have a quorum.
Thank you very much. We've just been joined by Board Member De La Torre. I have a couple of announcements to make before we begin the meeting. First of all, in this building, we are asked to make sure that everyone notices the emergency exits that are to the rear of the room. And in the event of a fire alarm, we're required to evacuate this room immediately and go down the stairs and out of the building until the all clear signal is given, when we will return to the hearing room and resume this joint meeting. If anyone wishes to testify today, we ask that they fill out a request to speak card, and they are available, I believe, just outside this room. And if they would return it to a board assistant or the clerk of the board, we would appreciate that. Is there someone here who can wave their hand to indicate where this should be in the back of the, I call that the back of the room. Okay, over here. If there's anybody either here or in the overflow room where I know there are also people sitting and watching. I'm really gratified by the attendance here today and the level of interest in this event. We will be imposing our usual 3-minute time limit on speakers, and we appreciate if people will summarize their remarks and not read if they have written remarks. So this is the first, as far as we know, ever meeting of the Air Resources Board and the Transportation Commission as one group. Chapter 737 of Assembly Bill 179 charged our two boards with conducting joint meetings at least twice per calendar year to allow for and encourage close coordination and collaboration of our transportation policies and programs, including but not limited to implementation of the Sustainable Freight Action Plan, development of the California Transportation Plan update, and setting of sustainable community strategies, greenhouse gas emissions reduction targets. These meetings are a new procedure for us, and it's an opportunity for us to make progress that I know has already been underway at the staff level, but as an opportunity for all of these commissioners, appointees, elected officials to be together. Obviously, we've got a lot of valuable people's time here, and we want to make sure that these meetings are as useful as possible for those around the table as well as for the public. And really, this supports a desire to have transportation planning be more closely aligned with other agency goals that I know we share, including addressing air quality, health, equity, and climate change. Having joint meetings presents an opportunity for both of our agencies to better understand our mutual goals and areas of interest, as well as the challenges that we're facing, to learn more about how each other's proceedings work, and to see how collectively we can work to overcome some of the barriers that we've encountered in the past to making our communities as healthy as possible. We know that more needs to be done to make transportation reliable and to reduce vehicle miles traveled across the state. And both of our agencies have responsibilities to make sure that this happens in order to meet the collective goals. Technology, like zero-emission vehicles, will carry us far, but it will not be enough to get us to where we need to go. So it's going to be a time when we're looking for new and creative strategies to be put in place in order to address the increasing pressures on our transportation systems. I would now like to invite my colleague, the other chair at the table here, to say a few additional opening remarks.
Well, thank you, Marianne. I'm delighted to be here. Fran Inman, chair of the commission, and we started our day with a hearing this morning, so this is a great opportunity for us this afternoon. We're fresh off of talking about our partnerships and our system of systems, and so delighted, also delighted with the robust turnout here today, and I think it's a wonderful opportunity for us to engage. So we're going to go through and have an agenda and overview, but I think it really is important for us to listen and learn and realize that we really are looking at comprehensive. We had Ben Metcalf from Housing at our hearing this morning and had a very robust discussion about the housing challenges in California and how that relates to the transportation solutions that are before all of us. So delighted to be here on behalf of our team and our board and look forward to getting to work. So thank you, Chair Nichols.
Great. AB 179, as I mentioned before, which requires us to get together, recognize that there's a shift that has to happen in how the state as a whole thinks about our transportation systems and the changes that are needed in the planning processes that we both use to reach our mutual goals. We have invited Assemblymember Cervantes, the author of the legislation, here today to give us an overview of the legislation, including its purpose and the rationale behind the bill. Her perspective and vision for this joint meeting is something that we certainly want to hear more about. So, if we could.
Thank you, Chair Nichols, and to everyone here today for allowing me to join you in our first joint meeting between the California Transportation Commission and the California Air Resources Board. You know, when I first introduced AB 179, the idea was to foster a collaborative partnership between these two synergistic entities. As we know, you're both tasked really with the charge of leading in our state's future goals in economic and environmental trajectory. And so, you know, as we talk about climate change and how it's altering our world and the serious threats that it has in our communities across the state, we must continue to lean in and lead in the clean energy and the transportation revolution. Now, we also must believe that investment in our disadvantaged communities will change the marketplace and serve as a reflection of our environmental values as Californians. Our state legislative directive requires us to use, you know, efficient mobility and also clean air. We have to make sure these two coexist. And so as we look at real and measurable improvements across our state, I think this is important to keep in mind. Just touching base on SB1, as you all know, I supported. And as we touch on this issue within the district, you know, this is important to make sure that my constituents are getting from home into work and back home safely. And that we also reduce our environmental footprint. And this is going to be critical when we address climate change and pollution. Now, the Inland Empire is known to have adverse health effects, and so we talk about air pollution within my district. The IE has transportation and commuter ports that are coming through our freeways in our communities every single day at high numbers. And one of the co-benefits of SB1, I believe, was connecting transportation and the need for clean air. And you can see that through one of the projects, through the Congested Corridor Improvement Project. In one of the areas in my district, the State Route 71 and 91 is a prime example of where critical economic and transportation links exist within four counties, Orange County, Riverside County, San Bernardino, and LA County. And I've been an advocate from the very beginning to address the modernization of the 7191 project. Now, let's also touch on the grade separation projects that are so important to our goods movement and to reduce idling in addressing our increased capacity for public transit. These are just some areas that we touch on when we talk about SB1. But I do also want to recognize ARB's efforts when it comes to cap and trade and using funds to modernize our locomotive fleets for commuter rail. We know that there is BART in the Bay Area as well as Caltrain. So where does Southern California fall in this? You know, I only hope that we are able to build a clean regional transportation model within my lifetime in Southern California. And, you know, I think that we need to continue to find opportunities to invest in transportation infrastructure while at the same time delivering on economic and environmental benefits for all Californians, because that's what Californians deserve. Let me also note that the CTC and ARB are in a very unique position to invest in advanced technologies, as Chair Nichols did mention just a moment ago. Plans for a cleaner transportation model will soon emerge, and California needs to be at the forefront of that. We need to continue leading in those efforts. So planning statewide on recharging policies on recharging or addressing consumer ZEVs concerns. We need to do this in not isolated. You know, right now we could focus on policies in isolated realms. We need to make sure that we start merging our goals together in addressing some of these critical policy issues, not in separate silos. So with the goal of implementing a zero emission action plan comes the need for even more forward thinking than we've done before. So just to touch on some of the zero emission vehicles, we know that there's going to be, the market estimates a cost parity not to carbon vehicles by 2025. Now, you all are tasked with the hard job of making that a reality, and we know that. The deployment of ZEVs and our technology gains must meet market traction, as well as zero emission vehicles for medium and heavy duty duty vehicles by 2030. That must also reach market traction. So I find it necessary to highlight these specific issues related to ZEV deployment. Why is that? You know, every Californian right now can't afford a zero emission vehicle. And certainly we want that to be the case, where middle income families and low income families can purchase a zero emission vehicle. And so we can make that happen. We can make that a reality that can be more accessible. And I think that it's important for these two bodies to consider policies, policy proposals, in order to make that a reality. Now, just to close, you know, I truly appreciate and want to acknowledge the work that you both have done to capitalize on our goals, our statewide goals. Now, I think that this is another opportunity to work together in a collaborative approach where we can actually utilize the tools that are at our disposal. We have ARB that recently was down in our area, neck of the woods in Riverside. We have so much capacity to continue growing in inland Southern California, and I just hope that we can continue to use our resources and intellectual capacity to meet our statewide goals. And I appreciate all the hard work that you've done thus far. Just know that I want to be a partner and a resource to you, whatever you would need from your legislators. I want to make sure that we are in this together. So thank you.
Thank you very much. Chair Inman and I collectively have been at this for probably more years than either one of us would care to acknowledge, and are both Southern Californians, so we share a lot of your interests and concerns as well. In order to further the efforts at collaboration, we're going to hear from the staffs of our two agencies about their missions and programs, how they actually work, and to give us a more in-depth understanding of what is possible. But before we do that, I would like to acknowledge the presence of the Secretary of the State Transportation Agency, Brian Annis. And Brian, if you would like to say a few words to us, we would appreciate hearing from you. The red light should come on.
Up a little further.
There you go.
Okay.
That's Silicon Valley technology.
There you go. I have my IT guy with me here.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot. I really appreciate the chance to just briefly say hello. And I've had the opportunity at my work as undersecretary to work a lot with the ARB staff and on a lot of things, and really appreciated that opportunity over time, and as well as CTC. So I really am excited about this opportunity because we have been transforming in many ways with the way we work with our transportation agency and our CTC. A lot more responsibility actually has been coming to the CTC, and part of that's with SB1. So some of the plans that used to just be at the Caltrans side or at the agency now go through the CTC for initial guidance on what we need to include in some of those plans. And then in some cases, there's approval of those plans at the CTC. So we have this increased coordination role both within agency and our transportation commission, but also also with the Air Resources Board. And the subtext, which has been mentioned here too, is we really, for this administration, did our one of our key goals was to stabilize and increase transportation funding. Of course, that was done last year with Senate Bill 1, and that's very key for us. And one of the things that we really worked on with input from a lot of the ARB staff over time was, you know, what is transportation investment in the climate era when we need to be cognizant and reduce greenhouse gases? And I think that resulted in a transportation funding plan with SB 1 that's very focused on fix-it-first investments to maintain what we have, has a very high transit-only component to make sure that important area gets invested in. And then with our multimodal programs, looks at increased coordination. Of course, with some of our big congestion programs, we have a requirement that for MPOs, those projects be in a region that are approved to meet the targets set by the Air Board for the sustainable community strategies. So we're excited about that investment strategy we've put together. And I think this forum, which will be going forward in the future into the next administration, really has a lot of opportunities to achieve that coordinated response that will, I think, on both sides, create more effectiveness and better outcomes from investment. So thank you for the opportunity to say hello.
Thank you. You're welcome to stay. All right. So the next item on the agenda is the presentations from the two executive leaders of our organizations. I'm not sure if they flipped a coin, but Richard Corey is going to begin with a presentation on CARB's organization, mission, program, and then following him, we will hear from Susan Branson, executive director of the CTC. So, Richard.
All right. Thanks, Chair Nichols. And good afternoon. And we are equally excited as well about this inaugural meeting and really what's to follow. It's already elevated our respective coordination efforts. I'm using my touch point as I now am speaking weekly with Susan Branson. And we really do look forward to building a strong partnership with the commission and the staff. And in this presentation, I'm going to provide a short overview of CARB's history, mission and organizational structure, some key air quality and climate successes, and some priorities. I think you'll find it useful context for the conversations that follow over the course of the day and months and years to follow. So now for some CARB history. California has been leading efforts to reduce air pollutants across the state for well over 50 years. And Dr. Ari Hagenschmidt discovered the nature and causes of photochemical smog. His work became the foundation upon which today's air pollution regulations are based. To set the stage, California had the worst air quality in the country, which had drastic impacts on public health, and the public and political leadership demanded action. In 1967, then-Governor Ronald Reagan signed the Mulford-Carroll Air Resources Act that created CARB to address the state's air quality problems. The Federal Air Quality Act, a forebearer of the Clean Air Act, which followed, included giving California unique authority to establish clean motor vehicle standards to address our extreme air quality issues. Our mission is to set the state's air quality standards at levels that protect those greatest at risk, children, older adults, and people with lung and heart disease, identify pollutants that pose the greatest health risks, measure our progress in reducing pollutants, certify motor vehicle emission control systems and test for compliance, research the causes and effects of air pollution, study the costs and benefits of pollution controls, and lead California's efforts to reduce climate changing emissions. Our board consists of 16 members. 12 board members are appointed by the governor and confirmed by the state senate and represent local air districts, experts in the fields of engineering, medicine, agriculture, and law, and public members. The chair serves as the only full-time member. There are two legislative appointees focused on environmental justice issues, and we have two legislators that are non-voting ex officio members. The work of the board is supported by a diverse team of scientists, engineers, economists, lawyers, and policymakers who collaboratively make up the world's most respected environmental air quality agency. The board coordinates its efforts with the US EPA and air districts who have complementary air quality roles. Along with our air quality partner agencies, industry, and environmental stakeholders, California has made exceptional progress on improving air quality while the number of cars and trucks on the road grew dramatically. As a result of our programs, ozone levels in the Los Angeles area have dropped roughly one-third of their 1960 levels, one-third. In the 1990s, health studies revealed that fine particulates are responsible for most of the premature deaths associated with air pollution. Thanks to innovative air pollution controls, annual PM2.5 concentrations in Los Angeles have decreased to about one-fifth of their 1960 levels, and we've seen similar reductions in the Valley and elsewhere. Despite our tremendous success, many areas of the state continue to suffer from poor air quality. Thus, as we look forward, we're building on our successes while strengthening the partnerships to support the planning and innovation needed to ensure all Californians have healthy air to breathe. Our transportation strategy consists of regulatory and incentive-based policies to support the transition to clean cars, trucks, buses, and fuels. Later this year, our board will consider regulatory concepts to support the continued transition to zero-emission transportation. We're also taking steps to support the EV charging infrastructure needed to charge millions of zero-emission vehicles. This includes implementation of the Volkswagen Zero-Emission Vehicle Investment Plan, as well as working with the PUC, CEC, utilities, and businesses on infrastructure investments. We're expanding our outreach and education for ZEV buyers. Additionally, we continue to conduct testing to identify and enforce against those that don't play by the rules. We plan to strengthen the Low Carbon Fuel Standard program later this year, which continues to support the production and use of clean, low-carbon fuels. Communities adjacent to busy freight corridors can be particularly burdened with air pollution. This is especially true of neighborhoods sandwiched between freeways, ports, and rail yards. In 2017, the legislature passed two key pieces of legislation that will define our work for many years, AB 398 and AB 617. AB 398 extends the cap-and-trade program to 2030 and designates it as an important and necessary part of California's post-2020 GHG reduction efforts. AB 617 recognizes that while California has seen tremendous improvement in air quality, not all communities have benefited equally from these efforts. The bill focuses on working with communities, air districts, industry, and others to take action to reduce emissions and exposure in the state's most impacted communities. To further reduce the health impacts from the freight sector, staff is developing regulatory proposals focused on transitioning cargo handling equipment and commercial harbor craft sectors to zero and near zero technologies. We're working to develop a freight handbook to encourage the use of the cleanest available engine and equipment technologies at freight facilities. And our team is developing strategies to further reduce emissions of toxic metals, including the evaluation of potential amendments to the chrome plating control measure. This slide identifies several actions in the 2017 update to the scoping plan. It underscores the collaborative nature of the efforts, as well as some of the near-term deadlines. And with that, I conclude my remarks. Chair.
Thank you. Why don't we go ahead and hear from the CTC? I know that's also a brief presentation, and then I'd like to give the members of the two commissions an opportunity to ask any questions that they might have.
Board members and commissioners, it's a pleasure to be here today. I am Susan Branson, the Executive Director of the Commission, And I am looking forward to these meetings. Just to have this opportunity to collaborate together is a wonderful opportunity. And I wanted to take in my opening remarks just the opportunity to thank the board for allowing their staff to have worked with us as staff over the years on in the development of regional transportation guidelines, plan guidelines that really inform the development of sustainable community strategies following AB 32 and SB 375, and most recently upon the completion of the first round of SCSs that were adopted and finalized subsequent to SB 375, the bill passing. And also in our recent programs that we've moved forward to adopt transportation funding programs under Senate Bill 1, and also in preparing for this meeting. So today I am really going to provide, I'm focused on just giving you information on the commission to set the groundwork as we continue collaborating over the next into the future. So this first slide, the commission was established in 1978, and it was established out of a growing concern for a single unified California transportation policy. It replaced and assumed the responsibilities of four independent bodies: the California Highway Commission, the State Transportation Board, the State Aeronautics Board, and the California Tollbridge Authority. And just this picture is interesting. The Governor Brown, he actually was the governor at the time the commission was formed and attended the very first meeting of the commission. The commission has 11 voting commissioners and two ex officio commissioners. Nine of the voting commissioners are appointed by the governor. One is appointed by the Senate, and the other is appointed by the Assembly Speaker. The the Senate is actually the Senate Rules Committee. And the two ex officio non-voting members are appointed, one each from the Senate and the Assembly. Usually they are the chairs of the transportation policy committees in each house. And by law, each member must represent the state at large. The commission meets every 5 to 6 weeks in the urban centers in the state, and it does meet twice a year in the rural areas of the state through town hall meetings. This is the mission statement of the commission that was adopted in May 2010. And the commission, through its adopted mission statement, has made it clear that it is dedicated to ensuring a safe, financially sustainable, world-class multimodal transportation system. A system that, through the efficient movement of people and goods, reduces congestion, improves the environment, and facilitates economic development. The commission, through this mission statement, has made it clear that it understands that the transportation system really is the backbone necessary to meet our other state goals for housing, employment, a thriving economy, and a thriving environment. The commission has key statutory responsibilities. That is, the law really dictates the work of the commission. The commission is responsible for providing policy advice and assistance to the legislature and the administration on evaluating state policies and plans for the transportation program. The commission is required by law to adopt guidelines for the development of the regional transportation plans that we know are very important to the Air Resources Board. The commission is also responsible now for developing guidelines and adopting guidelines for the development of the California Transportation Plan, which is something that we will be coordinating with you and discussing with you in future meetings. Commission also adopts guidelines for funding programs, commits funds to transportation projects, and allocates funds to transportation projects for improvements throughout California. Commission has many more responsibilities, approving toll facilities and more. To put it in context, the commission started its first day of a two-day meeting and has over 140 agenda items to consider. So the picture of this slide is a picture of all of the commission staff that support the commission. This slide really wanted to share with you the overarching process that the commission follows in conducting its work to commit funding to projects. Everything the commission does is done transparently with great outreach and great levels of partnership. Really, the commission, what it does is it adopts guidelines that form the basis for project selection, administration reporting, and accountability through a very open and robust process again. The projects that the Commission funds must be in an adopted regional transportation plan. The projects that the Commission funds must be nominated by the state. Normally, Caltrans, regions, local agencies, or other eligible applicant. The Commission does not have a role in nominating projects for funding or suggesting projects to be nominated. The Commission has no regulatory or authority to mandate the projects that will be included in a regional transportation plan and brought forward to the Commission for funding. Evaluation criteria and performance metrics are used to evaluate projects nominated for funding. And the projects funded by the Commission are those projects necessary to implement the regional transportation plans and for MPOs, the sustainable community strategies, including land use, housing, and transportation strategies that, if implemented, would allow the region to meet its greenhouse gas emission reduction targets. Recipients of transportation funding are held accountable through adopted accountability guidelines and ongoing reporting for carrying out their promises related to scope, cost, schedule, and performance of the projects. This slide shows the recent programs that were included in and funded through Senate Bill 1. But before we go into that, I just wanted to let you know that in 2016, the Commission had advised the legislature in their role for advising for more than a decade on the shortfall in transportation funding. And the reality was in 2016, the Commission was forced to deprogram hundreds of projects, remove committed funding from hundreds of projects across the state because we had a $1.5 billion funding shortfall in transportation funding to take care of projects that we had previously committed funding to. And in 2016, not a single new project was added over a five-year period for the State Transportation Improvement Program. So thankfully, the governor and the legislature enacted Senate Bill 1 in April of 2017. This bill raises the funding provided through Senate Bill 1 raises over $5 billion annually. It's really directed at divided between local and state transportation priorities. And it does present a multimodal comprehensive approach to California's transportation program. More than $4.4 billion of this funding does fall under the California Transportation Commission annually. When you look at this slide, you'll see that there are other programs. A bulk, a very large program relative to transit does not fall under the California Transportation Commission. So following this bill, the Commission moved quickly and called for and invited all the state agencies, our partners, including Air Resources Board and our regional partners, MPOs, as well as the environmental community, social equity, and building and industry and others, to really meet as a kickoff at City Hall to hear the input on what should go into our guidelines to fund and move these programs forward. And that served as a foundation for us in developing the guidelines to implement these programs. And the Commission subsequently held over 40 public workshops to seek input throughout the state. And this slide is just a summary of the adopted programs that the Commission has moved forward on this year since SB1 was enacted. So in the last year, the Commission has dedicated over $9 billion to programs that will benefit all Californians throughout the state. By adopting multi-year programs, the Commission was able to leverage Senate Bill 1 funding with other state and federal funding to ultimately commit over $25 billion to projects. Projects funded make up a comprehensive portfolio of projects that will improve safety, reduce congestion, improve the environment, and facilitate economic development. By programming projects in the regional transportation plans, sustainability and air quality goals are built into these projects. Overall, these projects are expected to reduce community impacts, reduce greenhouse gas emissions, benefit disadvantaged communities, reduce congestion, and more. The adopted programs result in fix-it-first investments to take care of existing infrastructure. Nearly three-quarters of all the money that was programmed by the Commission this year is dedicated to fix-it-first and taking care of our existing infrastructure. But these programs also fund mode shifts to transit, to increase transit ridership, increase biking and walking, multimodal investments in the most congested quarters of the state, and trade corridor improvements to facilitate the efficient movement of people and goods. And this slide shows just a summary of the types of projects that the Commission programs and has programmed. And as MPOs implement their sustainable community strategies, what we have seen is an increase in multimodal project requests. And this is this was positively shown in the recent LAO report that stated that California has not added much highway capacity over the last 10 years. There has only been a 1% increase in the number of highway lane miles, they reported, and our percentage of bike and walking trips has increased. And that appears consistent with the types of the work and the plans that the MPOs have been preparing. So there's a project as an example that the Commission recently funded. Commissioner Kehoe has a lot of experience with this project, but just wanted to, as an example, in San Diego, there's a project called the North Coast Corridor Project, and it's a project that the Commission recently invested funding in. It will provide express lanes to increase carpool, van pools, bus, ridership, but it also will construct double tracking on sections of the Lausanne Rail Corridor. It'll construct bike and pedestrian improvements throughout that corridor, and it will also include environmental enhancements and habitat preservation. And those are the type of projects that we are all, you know, working towards seeing more and more of. So this is my last slide. This is just a summary of just a few areas that we thought we would be important to collaborate on. The first one, the CTC guideline development, we look forward to continuing to collaborate with you. We have with your staff. But one of the guidelines that we're kicking off in July is developing comprehensive multimodal congested corridor plan guidelines to inform multimodal congested corridor plans that MPOs will be preparing. This is a requirement in law for the Solutions for Congested Corridors program, and it seems like an area that there's true nexus on what we might be working together on. We also are interested in learning more about the regional transportation plans and the sustainable community strategy as far as what's working from your perspective, from ours. We know that you have a report coming out in the fall. And we would like to understand, too, the acceptance process for how ARB, I think there's a discussion that we could have on ARB's acceptance of the sustainable community strategies. And then on the project assessment and measurement tools, your staff has collaborated very much with us, and we greatly appreciate it on how we evaluate projects. But we know that there's more to be done. In the regional transportation plans, there are transportation demand models that we've written guidelines for, but also just in measuring what are projects expected to actually do? Do we have the right tools to evaluate? And then overall, as we look to technology, we know that we need to be prepared. We need to be proactive and not reactive. And when we think about autonomous vehicles, that would just be one example, but it's possible it will greatly increase vehicle miles traveled. And we need to talk about, we need to talk about the policies that should be in place to protect the public interest in that regard. And also, the Commission has been a supporter of the ZEV Action Plan. It has funded charging stations in the more remote areas of the state and in the rest areas. But we do know as vehicles continue to become more fuel efficient and the vehicle fleet turns to zero emission, it's important to plan for the future and address how to ensure that funding for transportation is sustainable. And we know that without sufficient, dedicated, and reliable transportation funding, the ability for the state to achieve its overarching economic, environment, housing, and other goals is greatly diminished. So that concludes my presentation, and thank you for giving me the opportunity to share with you.
Thank you so much. That was an excellent presentation, and also nicely will segue into the next phase where we get into more details about what we actually want to work on together. I know this was a somewhat lengthy opening, but it seemed like it was a good idea to give everybody sort of a common platform to work from in terms of what our two agencies are and how they see their overall missions. I think we could just get into the next phase of presentations so that we can then hopefully have some more open discussion among those sitting around the table. But before I do that, I do want to make sure that I've given everybody an opportunity. If anybody feels like they would like to add or ask a question at this stage of the game. Chair Inman.
I'm going to jump in here first, and I just want to publicly once again thank our staff. Susan showed you a picture of our staff, and that staff is the staff we have today, which is up 4 from what she had when SB 1 was passed. So if you look at all of those categories, we had the joke last summer in Sacramento was how many CTC workshops could you go to, but we take our transparency and accountability responsibilities very, very seriously. And so I just want to, on behalf of all of our commissioners publicly, thank you. You made it sound so simple, but we know that you all were just really, really working. And also, we're trying our best to avoid our acronym soup. I had said to Ron Nichols, or not Ron Nichols, but Ron Roberts, your board member, that we don't even speak the same language. And I think we are guilty in whatever sector we're in terms of just speaking our local vernacular, whatever it might be. I happen to hang out in the freight sector a lot, so I'm going to talk to you about yard hostlers and TEUs and all of those cool things. But I do think I appreciate it, and I think that there's lots of opportunity for us. Just in going through our morning agenda, I was ripping out pages thinking, okay, set that one aside. That's a good topic for it. Susan mentioned it. Mm-hmm. You know, whether it's vehicle miles traveled, we had a wonderful presentation, again, reminder today on the increase in vehicle miles traveled that we've seen. That particular presentation related to the fuel tax and how we've improved our efficiency, but with doing that, we're well aware that that funding source, while SB1 is in place, we ultimately are going to have to look for some other kind of a user fee, and we worked with Caltrans on the pilot, and what we learned on the vehicle miles traveled was we learned a lot, but we still had a lot to learn. And so I think that that's one of the things. And then I mentioned earlier that we had housing discussion, and we segue from that vehicle miles traveled into, you know, Commissioner Gilmetti reminding us that you, what is it? How do you say it, Jim? It's where you qualify. You live where you qualify, or something. I think for the loan, yeah. Drive until you qualify. Yeah, I know it was. It had a little ring to it, but it really, really stuck with us. And we talked about the elongated commutes and what does that mean for all of us. And Assemblymember Cervantes talked about, you know, really the Inland Empire, and clearly that is an area where folks have historically had very long commutes. I think in the Bay Area we're seeing, you know, maybe y'all are trying to break our records of long commutes, but regardless, we need to have lots of different mobility options. So I did want to just start by thanking you once again publicly. We've tried to really acknowledge the tremendous amount of work that's been done. And we have also reached out. We have a lot of partners in this room today. And so, as Susan said, that represents $25 billion worth of projects that are out. So we know that we have a lot of partners in that. We've reached out to our utility partners. We're reaching out to all our research or resource partners just to say, hey, you know, we're trying to make sure that we act very efficiently and very effectively. So with that, I'll see, anybody else want to, I don't know if we want to go to the old put your card up or how we want to recognize. I think it's just an open.
Pretty good visibility here. Yeah. People just want to raise their hand if they want to add. If not, we can just. Mr. Okay, De La Torre. Oh, they're taped down.
I think that was a hint.
Well, that'll teach you. All right.
Should we tell him that it's only his that is taped down?
I think we're.
You bet.
Great. All right. Well, let's move along then to a discussion about what CARB staff is doing with a scoping plan and the transportation sector, as well as our overall transportation-related strategies, because here's where we really start to get into the interface with planning, land use, as well as air quality and health and equity. And then we'll hear again from your staff, Transportation Commission staff, on how you actually do the programming and planning, how you prepare the corridor plans, because what we're searching for here is the sort of elusive spots in which we can align better. Because I think we all know that there's a perception out there among many of our constituents that we're not always in sync when we proceed on projects. And so before we get down to the level of having the kind of controversies that we tend to have over specific projects, it would be better if we were able to see how in the overall initial stages of planning we could be sure that we weren't allowing for any unnecessary delays and friction to arise by doing a better job of front-end alignment. So I think we'll start again with Richard Corey. We're going to turn it over to you, Ashley. Okay, great.
Good afternoon, commissioners and board members. What an exciting day we have before us here. My name is Ashley Giorgio, and I'm a staff person for the California Air Resources Board. It's great to see all of your faces. But more importantly, I want to introduce myself as part of a broader team that's working on transportation planning here at the agency. That's super important to me to say today, since I'm the only one in front of you. My colleagues and I continue to be incredibly passionate about transportation, land use, and, of course, the interface that we see with health. Very important. We're excited to have the chance to meet with you today and to really discuss these topics together. CARB shares many of the same shared goals as the Commission, including things like improving quality of life for all Californians, also access to jobs, affordable housing, community services, and all the things that we really need to live, work, and play. This is evident in our partnerships that we have with your staff. Thank you, Garth. But also the continued work that we've done together to date. We have some great conversations, and we see the importance of the relationships that we have really worked to build over time, not only through these joint meetings and this process, but generally through our coordination efforts. While we may not always agree, it's true, on the approach to solving a particular problem, we are always willing to take a seat at the table and have an open discussion with all of you. We're very excited about building on those collaborations and getting feedback and direction as well from both the board and the commission. Thank you so much for the opportunity to speak today. Transportation has a profound impact on individuals as well as communities. The system moves people between home, work, school, shopping, as well as recreation. It also enables the movement of freight between our ports, distribution centers, industry, and commercial centers as well. These connections really work to drive our economy and accessibility, but adversely, they also lead to consequences for our communities as well as our neighborhoods. The transportation sector and the fossil fuels that power them are the largest contributors to the formation of ozone, diesel particulate matter, as well as greenhouse gas emissions. Coupled with traffic congestion, housing, as well as the transportation cost burdens and resulting sedentary behaviors, the overall health of Californians is significantly impacted. Air pollution contributes to respiratory ailments, cardiovascular disease, and early death, with disproportionate impacts to our most vulnerable populations across the state. For example, children, elderly, as well as those with existing health conditions, and of course, our low-income folks and communities of color. Consequently, improving the health of all Californians will really require some significant cuts in pollution. from these particular sources that I mentioned, as well as changing the system to provide more transportation options than just driving alone. The California legislature and federal air quality requirements have really helped to shape the state's air quality and climate programs, setting out clear policy objectives for CARB. In 2006, the legislature passed the Global Warming Solutions Act, AB 32, which requires CARB to develop a scoping plan that describes how California will reduce GHG emissions to 1990 levels by 2020. In 2016, the legislature passed SB 32, which codifies a 2030 GHG emissions reduction target to 40% below 1990 levels. These climate targets really represent some benchmarks for us, consistent with both prevailing science, charting a path forward that is really in line with California's role in stabilizing global warming below dangerous levels. On the air quality side, so CARB and local air districts are really responsible for developing clean air plans and also really taking the time to demonstrate how and when California will attain ambient air quality standards. These standards are developed to provide public health provisions and protection, including protecting the health of our sensitive populations, such as asthmatics, children, and the elderly. SB 375, as well as SB 350, provide really clear direction for integrating land use, transit, as well as affordable housing to reduce single occupancy auto trips, but also really working to address something very near and dear to my heart, which is really increasing access for low-income residents and disadvantaged communities, which they face in particular when it comes to clean mobility options. So the question here really is, what is our vision for achieving these goals? Okay, in the next couple of slides, I'm going to walk you through a very high-level summary of the sections and actions of the scoping plan, which provides some commitments that were adopted within that plan. The plan helps to outline our path for meeting the goals, as well as some policy objectives, which you heard from Richard earlier. The energy sector in California is composed of electricity as well as natural gas infrastructure, which really brings the energy to homes, to businesses, as well as to industry. The energy and fuels that the strategies within the scoping plan itself will really build upon past successes through the implementation of 50% renewable portfolio standard, but also transitioning to cleaner, less polluting fuels that have a really low carbon footprint. In California, building GHG emissions are only second to the transportation sector itself. As a key strategy for this sector, involves doubling the energy efficiency achieved within the existing buildings, as well as increasing access to renewable energy. California's transportation system really underpins our economy. The extensive freight system moves trillions of dollars of goods every year and supports nearly one-third of the state's economy, which is really consistent with 5 million jobs. California's ability to remain an economic powerhouse as well as an environmental leader really requires additional effort to improve transportation sustainability, including transitioning to zero-emission vehicles and a cleaner freight system. Analysis shows that we need to approximately allow for 5 million zero-emission and plug-in hybrid cars by 2030, a very ambitious target from the hundreds of thousands of cars that are on the road today. These policies, along with cleaner energy sources, will reduce fossil fuel use and decouple the state from volatile oil prices. This decrease also means that California will be using less gasoline and diesel, resulting in healthier air and cost savings on transportation fuels. Unfortunately for the transportation sector, while clean fuels and vehicles are extremely critical to reaching our goals, they're not sufficient to meet them. As a result, we will need to reduce our per capita VMT to 25% from 2005 levels, which is equal to approximately 1.6 miles per person per day. These reductions will be achieved through a combination of more stringent SB 375 regional GHG targets, as well as things like additional policies through collaboration with local, regional, and state governments, along with businesses and consumers to really work towards promoting affordable transit-oriented development, as well as walkable, bikeable communities. The rapid technological and behavioral changes underway with ride sourcing services, as well as automated vehicles, are redefining the transportation sector as we see it today. It's critical that they support, as well as accelerate, progress towards a zero-emission transportation system, as well as we heard earlier, reduce VMT through pooling and connections to transit. Joint meetings between the Commission and CARB will really provide a wonderful opportunity, as well as a forum, to start addressing some of these really critical challenges. Natural and working lands also play a critical role in the state's climate strategy and the economy both. These lands support clean air, wildlife, and rural economies. They include our forests, rangelands, farms, wetlands, and coastal areas. Keeping these lands intact and at a high level of ecological function really is key. There's also an important synergy between preserving open space and reducing VMT. Finally, the plan also aims to increase system efficiency on freight operations at the specific facilities and along the freight corridors, such that cargo can really move with fewer emissions as a result. I've just outlined how VMT reductions are necessary to meeting the state's air quality and climate goals. But reducing VMT has other really critical benefits as well, and these really cannot be achieved with electric vehicles or low-carbon fuels. Earlier in this presentation, I spoke about the profound impact that transportation has on individuals as well as neighborhoods. The transportation system influences the economic, social, and environmental conditions in which we are born, live, work, and age. But cleaner technology and fuels will not ease congestion in our most congested cities, and alone don't provide people with more transportation and mobility options. Thoughtful transportation and land use planning can provide more reliable transportation options that improve access to employment, food, healthcare, community services, as well as other really critical drivers for wellness. Dependence on cars has a direct impact on the level of physical activity as well as health outcomes. Designing communities to promote increased levels of physical activity can reduce risk of chronic diseases to such an extent, in fact, that it would rank among the top public health accomplishments in modern history, and also help reduce billions of dollars of California's spending each year to treat these diseases. In addition to these really important benefits, land use and transportation planning that leads to reduced VMT has the potential to strengthen resilience to disasters and changing climate, conserving our natural resources, as well as reducing infrastructure costs, to just name a few. Cities, regions, and the state really face some critical and important challenges about how we want to grow, how we want to improve the quality of life, and also what we do in terms of making sure that we're doing it in a way that with limited resources. Through effective policy design, the state has an opportunity to guide transportation transformation and influence investments, and the investments decisions in particular, in a way that achieves some positive transportation, climate, air quality, and equity outcomes. These joint meetings offer us a really important venue to talk through these issues and to leverage the synergies and wrestle with some really difficult to understand trade-offs, and help us identify the best policies and projects that support these goals. We know we need to do better to align state transportation programs and investments, But how exactly we do this is why we are here today. Thank you so much to all of you for your time. I would now like to pass it over to our partners at the Commission to begin their portion of today's presentation. Mitch?
Morning. I'm Mitch Weiss with the California Transportation Commission. I'll be giving a brief overview of transportation planning and funding. The transportation planning process, along with the selection of transportation projects, what's referred to as programming, is a very complex process. It's driven by state and federal statutes, and it's really a bottoms-up rather than a top-down approach to identifying transportation needs and funding projects to meet those needs. This is a simple overview of the process. Transportation planning is the process of defining policies, goals, and investments to prepare for future needs to move people and goods. Transportation planning is a cooperative process involving all levels of government, and the process is designed to foster involvement by all users of the system through a proactive public participation process. Local planning is primarily conducted through general and specific plans. Regional governments play a major role in both planning and programming. In addition, the regional transportation plan, which I'll talk about later, is prepared by regional agencies along with other studies that they may prepare, such as rail and transit studies, bike and pedestrian plans, corridor plans, and freight plans. Caltrans, as the owner-operator of the state highway system, is the state agency primarily responsible for transportation planning. The project initiation document is a report in which the project costs, scope, and schedule are better defined and documented. And then programming is the short-term commitment of funds to specific projects identified in a regional transportation plan, which then hopefully leads to the actual delivery and completion of a transportation project. Each of the 18 metropolitan planning organizations in California and the 26 rural regional transportation planning agencies are required to prepare a regional transportation plan. This plan is a 20-year plan to ensure the region's visions and goals are clearly identified. And this plan is perhaps the single most important document that these agencies prepare. They are required to meet both state and federal requirements. The Commission is statutorily required to prepare guidelines on the preparation of regional transportation plans. Our guidelines were last updated in 2017, and for the first time, we prepared two separate documents, one for regional transportation planning agencies and the other for metropolitan planning organizations to address the additional requirements of SB 375, including requirements for the metropolitan planning organizations to prepare sustainable community strategies to identify how the regions will achieve its greenhouse gas reduction goals. The RTP guidelines were prepared with significant stakeholder input, including workshops held throughout the state. The regional transportation plans must be financially constrained, meaning they must identify projects within the estimated amount of funding that they'll have. Regional transportation plans prepared by the MPOs must also conform to the appropriate air quality management plan. As I mentioned a moment ago, planning and programming is a bottoms-up process. The Commission doesn't select the projects to be included in a regional transportation plan, and all the projects that the Commission ends up funding must be included in a regional transportation plan and be nominated by Caltrans, a local or regional agency. The California Transportation Plan, prepared by Caltrans, is required by state and federal law. Like the RTPs, this is a 20-year plan to articulate the state's transportation priorities and to serve as a roadmap for future investment. It also serves an overarching planning document to guide the direction of Caltrans modal plans. In 2009, SB 391 expanded the scope of the California Transportation Plan by requiring the plan address how the state will achieve maximum feasible transportation-related greenhouse gas reductions. Although the California Transportation Plan is similar to the regional transportation plans, it differs in two key aspects. One is the California Transportation Plan is exempt from identifying specific transportation projects. And second, it is not required to be financially constrained. In 2014, SB 46 authorized the commission to prepare guidelines for the California Transportation Plan. Like other guidelines adopted by the commission, these were prepared using an extensive open public process.
Did you say expensive?
Extensive.
Thank you.
The commission is small. Nothing we do is expensive.
Thank you.
In fiscal year 18-19, estimated funding for California's highways, streets, roads, and mass transportation is about $35 billion. Just under half of this comes from local sources such as county sales tax revenues, transit fares, toll revenues, and city and county general fund revenues. The commission plays no role in the selection of projects to be funded with these revenues. About a third comes from state sources, including fuel taxes and vehicle fees. The remainder comes from the federal government. A significant portion of this federal funding is pursuant to state law distributed via formula to regional agencies. This slide is a chart prepared by Caltrans that depicts the budgetary flow of California state fees and taxes designated for transportation purposes.
And it really fills that.
Yes. Yes, this is a more simplified view. Each of these revenues have specific statutory and, in some cases, constitutional restrictions on their usage. This slide shows some of the programs for which the commission has responsibility and the accounts from which those programs are funded. Not only do the revenues have statutory restrictions, but then the accounts have restrictions, objectives, or priorities, some of which were enacted via referendum or initiative. And then further, each program has statutory restrictions or objectives. Lastly, appropriations in the annual budget could place additional restrictions on the implementation of a program. And so I'll be going over the State Transportation Improvement Program as an example. There are a number of slides about the other programs, and I'm just going to bypass those in the interest of time because I think Richard will elbow me if I start going over. The STIP is a key planning document. Mm-hmm. All the projects in the STIP must be nominated by a regional agency or Caltrans. And pursuant to statute, the STIP can fund a wide variety of projects. Some of the examples are listed on the slide. But the funding from the STIP comes from the excise tax on gasoline deposited in the state highway account and the sales tax on diesel fuel deposited in the public transportation account. In the 2018 STIP, we averaged about $650 million a year, 98% of which was from the excise tax on gasoline, which is subject to the restrictions of Article 19. So these funds can be used on public roads, but their usage for transit is quite restrictive to certain kinds of transit and only when it was approved by the voters in that area. So only 2% of the funding in the STIP can be used for projects like bus or rail car purchases. We have been able to obtain some greater flexibility through appropriations in the annual budget act, in essence, exchanging state highway account budget authority for federal funding budget authority. However, this doesn't change our underlying statutory framework. This chart shows the flow of how STIP funds are divided into county shares and an interregional share. You can see there's lots of different splits that the money go through and formulas all in statute. Every other year, the Commission and Caltrans develop programming targets for each county and for the interregional share. All the projects programmed in the STIP, again, must be nominated by a regional agency or Caltrans through, again, a bottoms-up process. The regional transportation improvement programs submitted by each region and the interregional transportation improvement program submitted by Caltrans are required to be consistent with the adopted regional transportation plans and the state's interregional transportation strategic plan. To complicate it beyond this simple flowchart, pursuant to statute, the STIP is adopted biennially and covers overlapping 5-year periods. but within each five-year STIP period are portions of two sequential county share periods. Statutorily, the Commission's flexibility in programming projects in the first of those periods is limited. So I have information on a number of the other programs, which I've just included for you to read. In the interest of time, I'm just skipping towards the end. SB1 Accountability and Reforms. SB1 included a number of measures intended to hold transportation agencies more accountable for how funds are spent. As an independent agency, the Commission has been entrusted under SB1 with administering and overseeing several of these reform measures, including allocating Caltrans capital outlay support or pre-construction costs, holding Caltrans and cities and counties that receive road repair and maintenance funding accountable through annual reporting, tracking the performance of all SB1-funded programs under the Commission's purview and reporting to the legislature and to the public about how well the recipients are delivering on the promises they made to taxpayers. The program guidelines for all SB1 programs administered or overseen by the Commission have been adopted and finalized. And as Susan mentioned, we held more than 40 workshops to do this. In addition, the Commission has already programmed more than $9 billion in SB1 funds. In March, the Commission adopted accountability and transparency guidelines to further lay out its expectations to ensure that the promises that are made to taxpayers are kept. Additionally, SB1 created the Independent Office of Audits and Investigation, led by an Inspector General appointed by the Governor. The Inspector General is vested with the full authority to exercise all responsibility for maintaining a full-scope, independent, and objective audit and investigation program. SB1 requires the Inspector General to report annually to the Governor, the Legislature, and the Commission with a summary of the investigations and audit findings, recommendations, and the implementation status of previous recommendations. With that simple presentation, I'd thank you for the opportunity to be here.
Are we
going to
do a quiz?
No quizzes, but I do think there's a chance now for the board members and commissioners here to jump in to some further discussion about where we want to take this program and what are the things that we think have the greatest opportunity to move us forward. I'm going to call on one of my board members because he's shy and may not raise his hand right away. For those of you who don't know, Dan Sperling, Dan has for a long time run the Institute for Transportation Studies from UC Davis and is very knowledgeable about the interaction between technology issues and planning issues in particular. And I know he's been anticipating this meeting for a long time. I was able to persuade him not to come in with a list of the top 20 things we needed to get done by next week. But in all seriousness, I know you've been thinking about this quite a lot, Dan. I'm hoping maybe you could share a few thoughts about what you think our priorities ought to be for this group.
Well, thank you. I have been looking forward to this meeting, at least in a conceptual way, for many years. And it's because of a frustration that as we on the CARB side, we look at transportation, and much of what we do is transportation. We really are disconnected with the money side of it. And the money side of it determines a lot about the investments that are made, the projects that are developed. So I think we're all on the same page if we define it at a high level. So I think we're all here to try to achieve a more sustainable transportation system. And actually, you know, I've been talking about that a lot, wrote this little book recently, and so I've been talking to lots of mayors and city councils and MPOs, not just in California, around the country, around the world, and I've come to some appreciation of, you know, both what can we realistically hope to achieve, and maybe even more importantly, how do we communicate it? And I think this group of bodies here is, you know, a good, you know, place to frame it. So, I mean, at a very high level, we want sustainable transportation. And that, when I just say that, I mean economically, environmentally, and equitably, you know, sometimes called the triple bottom line. And we're all coming at it from different parts of it. And the reason I think this is really an exciting time is because transportation is really on the cusp of major changes now. So if we had this meeting 5 years ago, I would have rolled my eyes and said, you know, we're just going to fight over formulas or something like that. But now we have major changes coming. We have the electrification of not just light duty, but even parts of the heavy duty sector. We have all of the shared mobility that's starting to happen, and with great promise and a steep trajectory, and we have automated vehicles, just autonomous vehicles just on the horizon. And these, thank you, I'm glad you're here now, because I was going to come back to you here.
That's dangerous.
So we now have, I mean, I think a way to look at it is we now have an opportunity that we haven't had in a long time in transportation to really create sustainable transportation, economically, environmentally, equitably. And these, you know, what we call, sometimes they call three revolutions. Actually, Steve Heminger from MTC just sent me an email just a few minutes ago. I did a presentation there last night, and we came up with a new acronym, Connected Automated Pooled Electric Vehicles, which means CAPE. So super, we need superheroes here to achieve that. And that's in our grasp. And I think neither on the transportation side nor the environmental side have we been really thinking about this very much at any level of government. And you know, and a lot of businesses are a lot. They don't know quite how to put it all together. So we have an opportunity here, and to break through some of these discussions, you know, I know a lot, all of us were probably, our eyes were rolling, you know, looking at all these different complex procedures that each agency has and trying to break through it into what can we really do. And so I come back to what Susan Branson said. I think she had a slide there that is what we need to focus on. And she came up with these four areas for collaboration. And I would suggest that's where we start. Because, you know, there's so many programs going on, there's so many formulas, there's, you know, it's, we need some place to kind of get started. And I think that's it. So, and there's been a little press. So the four, just as a reminder, CTC guideline development, SCS target setting, you know, and that's the SB 375 program, project assessment and measurement, and policy framework for technology advancements. Put it up there. Oh, good. We've got some good people here running the audio video. So I would suggest we, I mean, so this is completely unscripted, but I think this, I would suggest this is where we start. And we look at these four bullets because I think that's where the opportunities are. And, you know, I've talked to some of the MPO directors about this as well. And I think that, you know, for instance, our SCS program, quite frankly, is weak. I don't know what a good adjective is. But it sets this, you know, these targets, and somehow that's an area where we can work together better to achieve some of the targets that we all have, in that case for greenhouse gas reduction, but doing it in a way that's, you know, makes sense economically. We have the policy framework for technology advancements. We've got to rethink that completely. All the SCSs essentially ignore it. For just as an example, the RTPs ignore it. And so that's, so we have these different frameworks and mechanisms. So I mean, I think I'll probably leave it there. You know, we've been exchanging some comments here about we can do a lot better. And I think, so let me just leave it there. Does this make sense that we focus on these areas and think about how do we do project assessment, you know, a little different, a little better? How do we How can we bring in some of the environmental considerations more explicitly and effectively into the CTC guideline development? I hope I'm not pushing this too far, too fast, but, you know, we don't want to waste our time here, do we?
I second that.
Thank you, Mr. Fraser. Judy? Microphone.
The only thing I would add to that is that when we do the SCS, it's always tied to the RTP. And I wonder if it would it be useful to put RTP / SCS in that framework.
Spoken like a local elected official.
Yes, that's me.
I know.
And my MP always here.
You know, I don't want to only hear from ARB members, even though I realize that we're kind of the ones who are pushing to, you know, get into your turf. I think you probably want to get more into ours as well. I probably should not do this, but I'm going to call on you, Lucy Dunn, because I've known you for a long time, and I know you have views on these
and
issues.
And I'm such a fan, so thank you, Mary. That's very, very kind, Madam Chair. I actually agree with Professor Sterling. I think that these are good areas to collaborate on and begin, but I just want to remind everyone, for me, because I'm a local girl, and I talk to local people, and we're here in Sacramento, and we say words like RTP and SCS, and normal people don't use that language, right? Mm-hmm. We have a statewide housing crisis, depending on who you talk to, of about 1.5 to 3.5 million homes. And I love the slide that shows how the 2030 plan is high-density development in urban areas. I think that's exactly right. But when you talk to housing experts, you can't just build all the housing we need in infill, high-density urban areas. We also have to do appropriate greenfield. And 1%, 0.5%, but we need that planning area, particularly when we're talking about reducing vehicle miles traveled. And that's the practical side of this that I kind of get a little bit hoping that we'll at some point get into the real world side of, we said it earlier today, you know, right now folks are driving till they qualify and to get to their jobs. And we have issues with our own beloved 50-year-old CEQA that targets our infill development projects, targets our transit projects, targets our clean energy projects. There is great synergy to be have great power if CTC and CARB could work together and figure out how can we alleviate that burden to get what we all want in reducing vehicle miles traveled, reducing greenhouse gas emission, and making sure we're not sending our Gen Z and millennials to Texas. That's my local issue in Orange County right now. I'm losing millennials faster than any region in the United States except Silver Spring, Maryland. We can't sustain an economy that way with our state, and, you know, yet we all need to comply with our and support our climate change goals. We don't want to send our greenhouse gases to other states. We want to be the standard here. And that requires us to think in real-world terms about how are we going to get folks to value transit as well as get our government and our local leaders to value housing in the right places? And I think that kind of granular level is worth a discussion. And it does come under Susan's list of, you know, SCS's target setting and acceptance process. At the local level, this is probably not politically correct to say, but when you've got a housing crisis this big and sustainable community strategies has been in business for 10 years, it's a failure. I mean, I think you kind of said it, Professor, and it's like we're struggling with this. Yeah. We probably need to do something else and be really creative about it, how we can reach both those goals. So I've talked too much already, but thank you, Mary.
Thank you. Anybody else want to jump in here on the discussion? Yes. Mr. Fraser.
Thank you, Chair Nichols.
Another chair.
Yeah. So one of the things that I'm looking for in the collaboration, and also just through all the state agencies in my term in the legislatures, we do no harm. That we look at the public benefit of a regulation, but also reassessing it to see if it works or not. The other alternative is that when we're looking at opportunities, that we're not harming the economy of any one entity, that we look at is a certain amount of attainment okay until it's economically feasible or technology catches up with an opportunity. Those are the things that I've preached since I've been here. With that thought process is if we impugn our will on an entity, they are going to look to go somewhere else. And that's something that when we look at freight, we haven't been in California a good partner with freight. But there are 40% of the nation's goods and services that come through our ports. And certainly there's a kind of a stigma that they're demonized. And I don't think that's fair when they are probably a third, if not better, of our economy. And when you look at the potential for the increase of freight through our ports in the next 3 to 5 years because of the expansion of the Panama Canal, and also the larger freighters that are going to be bringing the containers into our ports by 3 times up to 24,000 TEUs, we need to have to be able to accommodate mobility and throughput. Okay, so we're looking at reducing vehicle miles traveled, but we also have an economy that we have to consider going forward. My hope is that the CTC and the California Air Resource Board will be able to collaborate about reduction of congestion outside of the gate. We do a real good job of regulating inside the port's gates, but when it gets to the gate, everybody else is on their own. And I think that we need to be considerate of that factor. The ports have been a good partner moving towards that direction that the CARB has asked them to be, and they have. But when we get to the gate, nothing happens but ineffectiveness, particulate damage to the communities that are adjacent to the congestion. And my hope is that we can look forward to that low-hanging fruit. Go with the goals that are the 5 million EVs and all of the things that we want to do. But right now we have a desperate problem of mobility and throughput through freight, and we need to be able to look at that. And the economy that will bolster will be absolutely phenomenal, because there will be a willingness for people to actually want to be truck drivers again, because they're not making their turns. And the Teamsters will be very, very happy to include those 500,000 truck drivers that we need to go forward. So I'm looking forward to that collaboration, and looking forward that we can be effective on that low-hanging fruit. Thank you.
Thank you. We have Supervisor Serna and then Senator Flores. Great. And then Supervisor Joya.
Thank you. So while I was listening to the staff presentations, I looked up the notice for the joint meeting today on CARB's website, just to read again for myself kind of what the mission statement is for the purpose of the joint meeting, outside of the fact that we're here by statute. we have to be here. But I think some of the comments that we've heard thus far, and I certainly appreciate the comments coming from Commissioner Dunn and others, as it relates to kind of this tiptoe around kind of the missing leg here to this conversation that I think is going to evolve to be very fruitful, but that is about housing and land use. We're here as a transportation rulemaking and policymaking body, and one that focuses on air quality and carbon reduction. But there, for me as a planner, not to have at the table those that are responsible for similar program implementation, policy implementation as it relates to housing in particular, it seems a little lopsided at first. And I know that this is just our, you know, the first hour and a half of our first meeting, but I think what I'd like to propose, and I'm not sure how to do it, and maybe it doesn't happen today, but I'd like to propose that we give some thought about who our audience can be in terms of better planning, suggesting between our two agencies as it relates to jobs, housing balance, for instance. Is it OPR? Does HCD have a role here? You know, I'm a big tent guy. That's, you know, it's very rewarding to see the kind of interest that is obvious here for this inaugural meeting. I'm not suggesting necessarily we have an even greater dais with more people, but I do think we have an opportunity to have a very productive new role in front of these two bodies. But I just feel like I have to mention out loud that it just feels like we're missing that third integral part for a state that is no doubt in crisis when it comes to housing. I have my memo from my local MPO here in Sacramento, and most of it is as it relates to housing. You know, and when you look at the monikers again for the two agencies and what our charge is, it's not land use necessarily. It's not housing, but yet we're trying to, I think, shoehorn a conversation that really begs that third partnership, if you will.
Good point. I would just comment, and Fran whispered to me that she actually had invited them. So
we happen to have Ben Metcalf on our agenda this morning for an update, and had a very lengthy discussion. We were almost late to this, I think, if I hadn't had my former chair kind of grab the gavel and tell us we had to move on. But I do think also just houses are where jobs go to sleep at night, so I think we can't lose sight of that, not to be contrite with some of our sayings, but I think they really do remind us all that, of that balance that we need. I think you're absolutely right. And so it will be important, I think, to have not too big a tent, but I too have never met a tent that I couldn't fill up. So I think it is important to really try to bring others into the discussion and talk about it, because otherwise the unintended consequences, I was just sitting here thinking about the goals to reduce vehicle miles traveled. Mm-hmm. And if 25% off 2005, and if our chart was right this morning in terms of the delta between where we were in 2005 and where we are today, there's a lot of, it's more than a 25% reduction. I don't know what that number is. You all have probably calculated. It might be actually 40% off of today's number. I don't know what the absolute number would be. But at the same time, e-commerce is, you know, on steroids, going wild. And I haven't seen the stats, but intuitively, I feel like we're offering up a lot more vehicle miles traveled on the freight side than ever before by the lifestyle that we have. And then also, just Dana, was hoping that you would at least mention some of the research, because I think it is important for all of us really to learn, because we are having changes at lightning speed, perhaps not fast enough for some folks, but the world of transportation, I would argue, is changing quicker than most times, other than that image we've all seen of the horses in downtown New York, and 10 years later it's full of automobiles. I still don't know if that was a 10-year move, but you know, it was pretty fast. And so I can only imagine what else, you know, we might see, even while Mary and I are still here trying to figure this out. So thank you.
Thank you. So before I let Dean speak, I just wanted to add that although it's true that we don't have everybody here who has a stake in these critical issues, I think it's progress that we have ARB and transportation both recognizing that what we do has a substantial impact on land use, because it wasn't so long ago that that was like a very controversial issue where the transportation planning agencies and the builders didn't even want to accept that that was a critical a part of what they did. So with that, I'll turn it over to you first, and then we'll add you after John. And then Yvonne. Okay. We better start. How about if you help me out here, okay? So I don't mess up. Well, everybody who wanted to speak, would you just put your hand up so we make sure we don't neglect?
For Alvarado and Burke, right? Yvonne's.
Yes, but we've already got Joya and Flores in the queue first. Okay.
Did you push the button?
There you go.
There is a past politician that doesn't know how to use a microphone, so.
Terrible.
I just want to say, yeah, there you go. Thank you, Professor. Just a couple of items, maybe picking up where the chair left off on land planning and maybe Chairman Frazier's point about do no harm. I'm very excited about the meeting generally. I guess my issue would be, for this group, let me start with the Central Valley and San Bernardino, distribution centers, inland ports, or ports generally. And so as we start to look at the agencies together looking at vehicle miles traveled, let me just point to the ARB's fantastic study, if you've not gone through it enough, on sustainable freight as being a real litmus test. And I think one of the things that we don't do enough, maybe both agencies, is kind of look towards that innovation side of how we get there. So I think the chairman mentioned, you know, what happens inside the ports. The ARB has many programs for clean air vehicles, et cetera. But I think the issue for the San Bernardinos or the Central Valleys is the fact that these were once places that were in the middle of nowhere, and now they seem to be in the middle of everywhere. So with ports and trucks coming in and leaving, and our battles in the Central Valley and some of these very challenged areas, I think it's really incumbent upon all of us to figure out how to better disrupt that particular space. It always amazed me that trucks would come from the port in the Central Valley or leave the Central Valley with trucks full and come back empty. We've got to figure out a better way, and I think that's trucking agencies. I think that's ownership. I think it's companies working together, trying to figure out how to share. It amazes me that we have an Uber-ish economy where a car can pick you up and take you somewhere and get the next person on the same block, but trucks still travel to the port full and come back empty and spewing, in many cases, a lot of bad stuff, particularly in these areas that we're trying to clean up. So I would say we should figure out how to get sustainable freight and CTC and our agencies working together on some way. Maybe the metric is vehicle miles traveled, but I do think trying to innovate that space would be super important. And the reason I say that is all of these internal places have changed so much. Central Valley used to be the home of prisons. Then it became, and still is in some part, dairies. And now it's becoming warehouses. And the environmental justice communities particularly are, and rightfully so, worried about that particular trend. So as we begin to look at sustainable freight, I think we also, maybe CEC needs to be at the table at some point in time talking about net zero warehousing facilities that allow some sort of balance. So if you are solarizing and you are microgridding and you are bringing some of the carbon aspects of this down, then we're starting to equalize not only the travel coming in, but in some sense looking at model distribution facilities that aren't going to be stopped at the legal level and challenged, but somehow net out to a positive. So I would hope that when we begin to talk about net zero warehousing facilities and we begin to look at smog and transportation and all the things that we were talking about today, that we look at these job creators as also being somewhat neutral. And I do think we need some planning and general folks in the county level and the city level need to start looking at some of those models as well. And maybe the last point that I have on this is that I'll use my little hometown of Shafter, California, which is kind of the nexus between 99 and the I-5. So you have a wonderful industrial park. So there you have Ross, you have FedEx, you have Target, you have Weatherford, you have major employers coming in, bringing jobs to a community that used to be prison jobs, now dairy jobs, and now good jobs in some sense. But the impact of all of those trucks coming in to that particular area is also of detriment. So I think maybe ending where Assemblymember Frazier left off, do no harm is a good standard. It is the right standard, but I also think being smart, being innovative. You know, I see Carl sitting over there, and I'm thinking of all those Silicon Valley companies hopefully trying to figure out how to disrupt an industry that is a sharing industry. It's Uber's great, but I think cargo with sharing would be greater. I really do. I think if companies get beyond who's in the truck and what company owns it and what's on the outside, and they're going out full and coming back full, that might, in some sense, lower the amount of impact, particularly in these congested areas. And quite frankly, I do see more lawsuits. I think more challenges at these large inland ports in the future. So I think we have to kind of try to figure out with our plan, and sustainable freight is, I think, the right place to start. And I think the plan that the ARB has put on the table is a very good one. So that, at least those are my comments on at least that part of it.
Thank you. I'm excited, too, and I think there's been a lot of good discussion here. But I think we sort of have a bold opportunity to talk about this in terms of values for people. We've talked a lot about SCS, and we've talked about the RTP. You know, we've talked about, as Professor Sperling indicated, you pulled up a chart that was shown in terms of these various four program areas. So while I agree these are important areas, I think those are more sort of the mechanics of that, the mechanics of how you get to what are the values. And so I want to sort of say that I think we have a precedent out there, the state sustainable freight strategy, which was how do we move more freight at lower cost, faster, and cleaner? And I mean, no one really disagrees with those four objectives. Those objectives achieve economic value, an equity value, and an environmental value. So the idea of do no harm, I sort of flip it and say, let's speak positively. Let's say we're achieving economic goals, environmental goals, and equity goals. So isn't what we're trying to achieve is a sustainable transportation system, broader than freight, that sort of has the same components of value, that with our growing population and growing economy, we want to move more people. That's both through cars and transit. We want to move them quicker or reduce congestion. We want to do it affordably, and we want to do it in a way that's cleaner and improves public health. So we've achieved economic, equity, and environmental values. And so I like put up the chart, the key takeaway that CARB, on the CARB chart, which was, if you want to put that up, which was aligned programs and investments, sort of says the same thing, maybe in one sentence, aligned programs and investments to achieve positive transportation, climate, air quality, and equity outcomes. So, I mean, isn't that what we're really trying to do? And all the discussion we're having are the different sort of strategies and mechanics of how we think we're going to get there. And there may be some disagreement sometimes on individual strategies, but I'm not certain, based on what I've heard, and I know the history of these two agencies, that there's disagreement in that first bullet. So I'd like us to think about maybe coming out of this meeting in a way that frames what's the goal in terms of values that we're trying to achieve, and then to align the work that we do to achieve these sort of ultimate goals and values. Because I'm in a local elective office as well for the last 30 years. That's what folks in communities want to hear, and I represent a community that's also a disadvantaged community. How are these policies helping me? How is it helping the economy? How is it helping equity? How is it helping the environment? So I think that's just sort of, for me, how I would think about the work we do, and then all the detail, sort of the individual plans that we may be looking at are achieving these objectives.
So focus on what we're trying to do instead of how we do it.
That's right. The values of what's the goal and the value that we all agree on. And I think the model out there of a sustainable freight strategy, which is frankly many state agencies working with the stakeholders, mm-hmm. working with those who are actually moving freight and moving with the environmental stakeholders, and they came, you know, and I again, no one disagrees with any of those four goals, and we're just trying to adapt them in a way to our larger transportation system.
I just want to comment that we have 24 public commenters who've asked to speak to us today, and even if we cut them back to 2 minutes instead of three, all right, 2.5. Well, all right, 2.5. Point being that it's going to take some time. So I just want to ask the remaining speakers to be succinct.
Commissioner Madaffer.
Well, I'll be very brief. I think that, and you made the comment, Chair, in a minute, technology continues to advance faster than, frankly, even government can keep up. And, you know, I took notes during the CARB presentation because the statement made was cleaner technology and fuels won't ease congestion. I get that. And more needs to be done to reduce VMT to provide reliable transportation options for everyone. And I'm just curious at some point, and don't need an answer right now, but I'd like to hear what some of CARB's ideas are on reducing VMT and how that's going to mesh with the public and the existing infrastructure that may or may not be there to achieve that goal. You know, I hear a lot about the shared economy that's out there, and I do believe shared mobility, first mile, last mile options, again, the private sector coming in, is going to probably help fill that gap. And I think, to your point, Fran, you know, what's happening right now in this sea change in transportation is probably much faster than most of us could keep up with. And so just watching that as it comes along.
Thank you. Commissioner Alvarado?
I think, you know, we can share goals and ideas, and both of us, both the commission and the board, have been talking about reducing vehicle miles traveled, doing what we can. But I think we also need to share consultants and presenters, because we were having Susan, and help me, about 2 months ago, maybe 3 months ago, mm-hmm. we had a presentation from a guy on autonomous vehicles, and they had done a study, and they predicted an increase in vehicle miles traveled of about 10%. Mm-hmm. And that's completely counterproductive from what we've all been trying to do. So as we get into the research, I think we need to share the information that's presented to each board, because that just knocked us on our tails when we heard that. And that was just a one-time increase, and then the incremental increases on top of that. You know, you're going to have autonomous vehicles delivering people, packages, maybe freight. And, you know, those are miles that I think we're underestimating. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be quite an impact both on traffic and the system.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so to adopt the CARB style, this would be congressional member, county supervisor. What am I missing here? Assembly member and Commissioner Burke. All of the above.
Brief. When I first heard about the legislation, I wondered why it was being proposed. And I assumed it was to bring us together. And they're tired of us being often on different sides when we all have the same goal. I hope that out of this meeting and future meetings, of course, the mechanisms have been set up in a very wonderful way, excellent way. But I think that everyone utilizes the fight between us in order to prevent us from achieving our goals. I would hope that what we come out of here is with a mechanism we can approach legislation, business, and other communities of how we approach any particular problem or legislation, that we aren't used to fight each other in order to achieve someone else's goal. So that's why I thought probably they said you're going to have to sit down together. Now, I may be wrong, but I think it might be very positive, and it might solve a lot of problems if we weren't brought in with different views on a particular objective, and that we had a mechanism, which we've talked about, that I think is a very effective one, to come together as we approach our legislators, as we approach business, and even the intellectual community. That's all.
Okay, thank you. I guess I'd have to say Senator Commissioner Kehoe.
Thanks, Sally. I'll be brief, too. First of all, like Yvonne, I kind of wondered what the intent of the bill was when I first heard about it. But clearly, this is a golden opportunity. I mean, this conversation is rich. It's important. It is long overdue. And I don't know how big this conversation should be, how many other parties we should pull into it, but we know housing is essential. Mm-hmm. The conversation this morning at the CTC said that. And all the other things that are happening with the cost of housing, the long commutes, et cetera. We have, the CTC gets the message. Every SB1 project must evaluate its sustainability, its greenhouse gas reductions, and its benefit to disadvantaged communities. So we get that too. We may not always agree with the quantifications between the two agencies, but we are doing it. And then what I would like to leave here today with maybe not the specifics, but that the two chairs and the two executive officers understand that staff is going to work on more specifics as we go into the second meeting. Mm-hmm. You know, are we going to address housing and how? Are we going to address the gap between transportation funding and the trend, actually, and the ever-widening gap with VMTs? We haven't mentioned the border. CTC and the transportation funding out of SB1 will add 15 air monitors to the border. It will reduce truck time idling on the south side of the border significantly. I mean, so we have a lot to share and more to do, and I'm very happy we've started this conversation. It was good.
Okay. Dr. Sheriff?
Thank you. Simple title, huh? And it's what I want to speak to. You know, much of what I think we're doing here is trying to. Well, there are many things we want. We do agree on, but we're different cultures. I'm thinking, gee, commissioners, what are those? Why aren't they board members? What's wrong with them? Who are these people? But yeah, they're different cultures, but we have much that we agree on, and this is part of bridging those difference in cultures. But the other thing that we really agree on and is at the heart of ARB, ARB is a health and safety code. That's where we come from. It's all about health, and that is something that I know the commissioners share concern about and a priority in, but it's another important thing to put out there because Ms. Dunn's comments about how do we get them to value things, well, money is one obvious way, but health is an obvious way, and I think it's been very powerful in much of the work that ARB has done. Absolutely. In getting consensus and getting reluctant partners to come forward, make what appear to be sacrifices to achieve our ends. So it's an important shared value to keep not just in mind but up front and be in part of project assessments and measurements. It's a common language we can speak.
Thank you. If I may respond quickly to Chris Kehoe's comment, because coming out of this meeting, I do believe that Chair Inman and I and our respective executive directors will be meeting to talk about where we go from here, certainly to plan for the next meeting, but that's a long way off. So I'm going to be asking you now to think while we're listening to public comment. I'm sure you can listen and think at the same time about the question of what do you want to do as members of these bodies in between the meetings, because I do think that we could quite easily assign ourselves some, you know, things that we would gather information about, meet across the two entities to talk about putting together some presentations, some connections along the lines of what Mr. Madaffer said also, so that we could be looking at who we would be hearing from the next time we get together. Okay, so shall we call on the public? Okay, one last thing. Yes. Just because you were first, you get to be last, too.
You know, it's great to think about the big ambitions and goals, but if we're really going to achieve, we have limited jurisdictions, each of us, programs that are constrained in various ways. I mean, we'd love to solve all the world's problems, but we have enough challenges talking to each other here. I would make a plea that we really focus on what are some, and I'll call them process things. You know, I know John doesn't like, you know, mechanics, but that's how we're going to.
How we use the mechanics to achieve our vision.
Right. Okay. Well, then let's focus on how we use the mechanics to achieve. I'll use that expression, and because I really want to restrain ourselves from being too ambitious here. We'll never get anything done. Step by step, I think, is what I would strongly urge. Otherwise, I mean, I'll speak for myself personally. I don't want to spend a lot of time. I've got lots of other things to do, and everyone around the table does. So let's focus on what is really achievable and within the boundaries of the authority and jurisdiction of the particular agencies.
Okay. Let's hear from the list of witnesses. I don't know if they're all here, but there is a place for public commenters to come and speak into that microphone. Is there a chair there? It would be a nice thing to do. Well, in the legislature, they make them sort of stand up and line up and, you know, bend over to the microphone. But I think we could provide a chair. Come to the table anyway.
Thank you. There you go.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the Commission and the Board. My name is Robert Phipps. I'm the Deputy Director with Fresno Council of Governments, and I just want to first thank you for coming together like this one organization who that operates typically from kind of a top-down approach, the other from a bottoms-up. As a regional planning agency and speaking on behalf of the regional planning agencies throughout the San Joaquin Valley, we're often between the two, trying to find, strike that very happy balance between health, the health of our residents and their prosperity. Our economy is very important to us, our roads are very important to achieving economic goals, but at the same time, we are fully on board and working very, very diligently to protect the health, especially of our most vulnerable residents in some of the most impoverished communities in the state. Speaking only for Fresno COG, some of our examples of that in developing our most recent transportation plans, reaching out to more than 2,500 of our residents to gather ideas for the kinds of projects that would not only be more sustainable, more health-related, bike and pedestrian projects, transit, but also help grow our economy. That came out of 16 public workshops, 20 different informational booths throughout the region, 11 different presentations, over 500 online respondents to our surveys, and yielding more than 1,200 different projects in our plans. And of those, about 17% are bike and pedestrian projects of the total 3,000 that will eventually make it into our regional transportation plan. So I just want to let you know that your MPOs, and specifically in the San Joaquin Valley, we are your partners. We are glad to see you here. We thank you for being here, and we appreciate your time. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair, Commissioners, and board members. My name is Richard Mark Antonio. I'm a managing attorney at Public Advocates, a civil rights law and policy organization in San Francisco, and also a proud member of the Road Charge Technical Advisory Committee that is convened by CTC. And I'm very happy to see your two boards meeting here today for the first time. You know, I think that you have indirectly, through the advocacy of many of us, many of my colleagues here, been learning from each other for a while. I'll give an example. In the 2017 RTP guidelines that you spoke about, Susan, and that many of us were pleased to participate in that process, some of the learnings from the Air Resources Board's funding guidelines for the GGRF investments in disadvantaged communities have found their way into that document, and I'm very excited about that. The point I want to make, and I think maybe we thread a needle here, I hope this will be of interest to you all, between the mechanics and the vision, is that I think that there is a challenge that we have in SB 375 that we're placing expectations for GHG reduction on MPOs that have, I'm going to guess, around 3% of the funding under their control. I want to particularly direct your attention to the role of the county congestion management agencies, and I think this is particularly the case in the larger multi-county MPOs. In my view, the investments that those county agencies, county-wide agencies make that find their way into the regional transportation plan are not consistent with the RTP, they are not consistent with SB 375 if they are increasing VMT and GHG emissions. My modest proposal for you to consider is that the CTC might adopt guidelines or amend its current guidelines on the STIP and the RTIP programs, which come up bottoms up from those agencies, to bring ARB's expertise into decision-making about how we decide when those actually are consistent and when they're not. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I think that's a great idea. Good afternoon, Commissioners. My name is Carter Rubin. I represent the Natural Resources Defense Council, an organization with over 400,000 members and activists in California. Thank you for the opportunity to address this joint meeting on the imperative of ensuring that our transportation investments are supporting and not harming our climate and communities. I think the staff report really crystallized the issue. VMT must be reduced to help us reach our climate goals, but the status quo does not put us on that path. NRDC supports ceasing adding new road capacity to our highway and road system, full stop. The way we invest our transportation dollars today is hampering our ability to achieve our urgent climate goals. And so we must shift to prioritizing investment in sustainable mobility options and stop the misguided practice of adding road capacity in the false hope of achieving congestion relief. As the Governor's Office of Planning and Research has advised agencies, highway expansion does not relieve congestion nor improve mobility, but merely induces more travel and carbon emissions. Instead, we should be investing in transit, biking, walking, and other shared modes for their environmental, social, and quality of life benefits. With better informed, performance-driven funding decisions, we can better serve Californians and shift transportation dollars away from inefficient and sprawl-oriented highway expansion projects and towards sustainable mobility options that that Californians need and expect. Today's discussion has been an exciting first step. I'm eager to hear your ideas about how we move forward in the interim between these two meetings. NRDC would urge you to have a publicly engaging process that invites stakeholders like us and our allies here today to be a part of that. And thank you for your time.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Chairs and Members. I'm Steve Brotherball with the Transportation and Land Use Coalition of Sonoma County. We have worked hard to get the SMART train into our county, and we hope that it will be a vehicle, as it were, to concentrate development in the downtown areas. I think what you just heard is very true. Adding lanes only is a prescription for more traffic. However, anybody who's in one of those lanes and who looks to one side and the other says, there's room for another lane here. If you just add one, I could get to where I want to go more quickly. So you've got a huge leadership issue, and that is to convince the public that adding lanes is not an answer, that we have to find other ways of moving people in lieu of vehicles. And when we talk about vehicle miles traveled, reducing vehicle miles traveled, this doesn't mean we're reducing the number of people that travel. We're going to increase our population. That means we've got to get more people into shared vehicles. And that's a big effort. But pay attention to what your kids are doing and what your grandchildren are doing. We visited our granddaughter in Denver. Denver is remaking itself, and she doesn't have a car. She's 35 years old, and she's never owned a car. Now, there are more and more people who are doing that. So there is light at the end of the tunnel, but it's going to take a lot of leadership. Thank you.
Thank you. I would like to ask people to take a look at the list and to make sure that you come up when it's your turn. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm Bryn Lynn Blatt, Associate Director of Climate Resolve based in Los Angeles. I appreciate having the opportunity to address this esteemed room today. I would like to support my colleague's comments about the need to shift transportation investments away from urban highway expansion. And I'd like to also draw your attention to, we passed out a framing document that we've developed in the lead up to today's meeting, so I hope you all have a copy. If you don't, you can come to me. But and we've done an analysis on urban highway expansion, which is the type of highway expansion that really does have that elasticity of 1-to-1 and doesn't relieve congestion. And we found that in the four-year period of 2012 to 2016, the most recent data we could get, there was a 10.2% increase in lane miles in, of those urban highway highways. So it is happening, and it's not an enduring mobility improving strategy. So I think there's a real opportunity there to shift those dollars towards supporting sustainable modes of transportation. And then we'd like to encourage you that as we make those investments in transit and active transportation, that we also need to proactively address displacement pressures that do accompany those improvements to an area's livability. If displacement continues to the extent that it is now, our future will be one of increased segregation. We'll increase those barriers to accessing opportunity. And there'll be more cars trying to use our already congested roads. That's because we know low-income households make up the base of our core transit ridership, and they take transit. Low-income households take transit at much greater rates than higher-income households. And so, when we force those low-income households out of those transit-accessible areas, we see a decline in ridership and more congestion. But so it's happening, and we need to address it head-on. We see a lag in equitable infill development, and that's really something we need to address alongside these sustainable transportation investments. We'd like for these strategies to go hand in hand. You'll be hearing from other partners about the importance of addressing transportation justice and electrifying medium and heavy duty, but. Really think that it's not a pick or choose strategy kind of situation, but we need to be addressing them all in an integrated way. And just briefly to Commissioner Madafra's point about ways to reduce VMT, I'd like to highlight Scoping Plan Appendix C. There's a bunch of great strategies in there, something we'd be pleased to dig into in an action plan. Thank you.
Good afternoon. Bill Higgins with the California Association of Councils of Governments. And we perhaps have a unique unique perspective on this meeting between you, because among our membership is the 18 metropolitan planning organizations who perhaps more than any other group speak both CTC and ARB. So I'm here to offer our interpretation services for you as you go on through this process. I say that half jokingly, but we do interact with both of you, and we are very encouraged to see both boards together, because sometimes there have been instances where trying to meet both objectives didn't align perfectly. We're also very encouraged to hear the conversation about housing. We think that that is as the entities who also distribute the regional housing needs assessment and think about where housing is going to go in the community, we see the balance among them. And we also, as agencies that are made up of local agency members, city boards of supervisors and city council members, we understand the value of local input into our processes. And these are all very, very difficult things to balance. So I'm encouraged that board member Sperling used a term that my members are all familiar with when he used the phrase ambitious and achievable in the same sentence when he talked about what you should have on your agenda before you. For those of you who don't know CTC, that's code for what the targets are supposed to be for us, both ambitious and achievable, or we're supposed to break a sweat to get to the target. And it's pushing us to get better results in our community. So we're very pleased to see this on the state level. I would also remind you with ambitious, achievable, I will say that taking local perspectives into consideration is very important. We have a statewide initiative that's going to challenge a lot of the funds that you saw before you today. And how we implement that, we have a public trust that we have to account for with the voters, and we have to balance their health, their safety, their economy, everything. And we're balancers, and we're glad to see that you are balanced too. So we offer any help to this process that you will call on us. Thank you.
If anyone wants Bill's phone, he can take it. It's all right. Bill and I are neighbors, so we can trade it later.
It says don't listen to Will.
Yeah. Hi, Will Barrett with the American Lung Association and Bill Higgins' neighbor. Thank you for the robust discussion today. The American Lung Association views this as crucial to moving forward with more effective air quality programs. I know the presentations this morning earlier today showed the real strong progress that's been made by ARB programs, local programs, and we think that this discussion is just another step towards achieving clean air for everybody. To Supervisor Joyer's point about setting values, I think this is a discussion of it's a public health discussion is what it comes down to. Our transportation choices, our health choices, and so we're happy to be here and echo that call for a strong value statement. As the transportation sector is the leading source of harmful air and climate pollution, we need all of our agencies to be working together to achieve healthier California. This is especially true for our disadvantaged communities that bear the greatest burdens from our transportation pollution sources. To Ms. Branson's point, your slide on recommended collaboration points. I think focusing on VMT reduction and on the policies that ARB puts in place around zero emission technologies, heavy duty electrification, and sustainable freight are spot on, and I think that's where this committee can have a really strong focus going forward. We think the dialogue here can really help to achieve some of those scoping plan programs to reduce VMT, increase active transportation that improves public health, while reducing our air pollution challenges. I wanted to also say that on the air quality and technology side, I think these agencies are working together well and can continue to work together well to really make sure that our infrastructure investments through SB1, the Volkswagen settlement, SB 350, really do align to make sure that the heavy-duty sector, the sustainable freight work, all are aligned in making forward rapid progress to the electrification in the transportation sector. So just to say that on both fronts, the VMT side of things and the electrification and sustainable freight side of things, this dialogue can really help to align the investment opportunities with our public health goals and those values of achieving healthier Californians for all California communities. So I look forward to the next discussion and look forward to working with all of you. Thank you. And Bill Higgins is on his phone, I bet. Not listening. He's tweeting
about it. Well, good afternoon, commissioners and board members. Seems like there's a common theme going here, so I'll skip right to about the second page of what I was going to talk about. My name is Michael Saint. I'm with Campaign for Sensible Transportation from Santa Cruz, a retired airline pilot with about 41 years of service. I retired 3 years ago. And basically, what we've learned about VMT and not widening highways is that we also submit that the old and futile ways of trying to reduce congestion need to make way for what works. And our understanding is that charging a price for the use of the roads. What we Californians can't afford to do is use highway toll revenues to expand new highway capacity for HOV or HOT lanes. The high cost of highway expansion will take the lion's share of toll revenues, leaving little, if anything, for public transit. The outcome would be truly regressive towards the working people. I'll jump right to the summary. If we are serious about reducing traffic congestion, we need to bundle the strategy of converting existing highway lanes to HOT lanes, and I emphasize existing highway lanes, with the revenue going to support effective transit alternatives. If we do that, we'll see our vehicle miles travel drop, and with that, our greenhouse gases. Personal request here. In closing, we ask your guidance to the Santa Cruz County Regional Transportation Commission. The commission plans to expand Highway 1 for 4 miles of aux lanes and plans on asking the CTC for funding. Guidelines for grants under the Congested Corridors Program include funding auxiliary lanes. However, those guidelines also state that the purpose of those lanes be for improving safety. The Caltrans draft EIR on Highway 1 project that includes the aux lanes concludes that there would be no safety benefit from the project. Even if we did a no-build, it'd be identical. Could you please ask your staff to advise our RTC that their grant application to the Congested Corridors Program would be stronger if instead of aux lanes, it included one or more other options currently understudied or being understudied by the RTC's Unified Corridor Study. Number one would be bus on shoulder of Highway 1, transit on the abandoned rail corridor, and enhanced bus service on Soquel Freedom Corridor. Thank you.
Good afternoon, commissioners. My name is Rick Longinati. I'm part of the crew from Santa Cruz. I wanted to bring your attention to something that occurred to us when we checked out the Sustainable Community Strategy for our region, which is AMBAG, Association of Monterey Bay Area Governments. It's a deep flaw that I think if it's statewide, it could really mean that SB 375 is not being implemented. The flaw is that according to the EIR on the SCS, vehicle miles traveled by 2040 will increase by 24%. That's bad, right? But according to the EIR, greenhouse gases by 2040 would drop by 22%. So how does that happen? How do you get VMT increasing and GHGs dropping? Well, might be vehicle efficiency, right? Well, they're not supposed to count vehicle efficiency. SB 375 is about land use and transportation, not supposed to count statewide mandates on vehicle efficiency. So how in the world do you increase VMT and get reduced greenhouse gases? Somehow the model is spitting out something that cannot be explained in real life. Okay, so that's a problem. And if that's a problem for us, it's probably a problem for your region too. What happens is in our AMBAG is that according to the EIR, the sustainable community strategy results in this great drop in greenhouse gas emissions whether or not you do a sustainable community strategy. In other words, the no project alternative is virtually identical in terms of its greenhouse gases outcome. as if you have the plan. So all the hours and all the time people spend working on a plan, and it's meaningless. So that's a serious problem. So I just wanted to add to what Mike Saint just said, which is our organization invited Susan Handy, professor at UC Davis, down to Santa Cruz, and she spoke about induced travel. And we all know that, you know, when you add lanes to a highway, you get induced travel if the highways fill back up again. What I didn't know, what really turned my head around, is that if you add a transit on our abandoned rail corridor, which parallels the highway will temporarily lose traffic, but you'll get that induced travel back again. So whether it's a highway expansion or transit, you'll get more congestion. So that suggests that the goal is SB1, which is congestion relief. We need to question, do we really want congestion relief? If we do, it's toll roads. And if we don't want an aggressive tax, we need to turn that around so that the tolls benefit transit. If people can get on a bus and give up one car per household, that's an enormous progressive measure and not no longer regressive. Thank you.
Good afternoon. I'm Brett Garrett from Santa Cruz. Thank you for holding this meeting. Transportation is very closely interlinked with air quality and climate, and we can and must improve all of the above, transportation, air quality, and climate. I see a contradiction in my local governments in Santa Cruz, supporting transit demand management on the one hand, while the county wants to build highway lanes and the city wants to build parking lots. I believe building new automobile infrastructure is basically the opposite of transportation demand management. To meet both goals, transportation and clean air, we need to support transit. In particular, I think we need to support new forms of transit, such as solar-powered personal rapid transit, or PRT. I'm very impressed with some of the innovative PRT systems that are being developed here in California. For example, SkyTran in Mountain View, very small pod cars suspended from an elevated monorail. There's Cybertran in Richmond, which is a more of a group rapid transit, larger vehicles on rails with solar panels overhead powering the whole system, and Spartan Superway being developed at San Jose State University. I advocate funding pilot programs using these technologies so that people can see the potential of a modern personal rapid transit system. These systems are efficient because pod cars are lightweight and the system allows going from point to point without stopping. Also, fewer empty seats in motions. I think a train or a bus is pretty efficient when it's full, but what happens, we have so many empty vehicles going up and down in the middle of the day that overall it becomes not very efficient, whereas pod cars are there when they're needed, and you don't need to run a lot of empty pod cars all over the system in order to provide the service. Elevated transit is safe because it can't run over pedestrians, it's above them, and it's fast because it flies over the congested traffic. And it's a small footprint on the ground, very good land use. It's a very robust form of transportation with low operating costs. There's a system in Morgantown, West Virginia, that has solved a lot of their traffic issues since the 1970s. It was a Richard Nixon project. Just think what a modern system could do. Please prioritize transit projects over automobile projects, and in particular, please support innovative projects that provide new carbon-free alternatives to being stuck in traffic. Thank you.
Okay, 2.5. Thanks, folks, for everything you're doing, and thanks to all the other people here who have been participating in this meeting. My name is Joe Jordan from the west side of Santa Cruz. You may wonder how we all got here. We all got here in one box, one solar electric vehicle, my Chevy Bolt, B as in Baker, no fossil fuels involved. The only thing that would have been more sustainable, in fact, we picked up Professor Dan Sperling on the way. He just left the door, though, so he's missing this part. But anyway, the only thing that would have been more sustainable would be had we taken bus and train, but we couldn't quite work out the timing on that one. But anyway, I am going to have enough miles to get back to the West Coast. I couldn't have said it better than all of my co-conspirators here from the People's Republic of Santa Cruz, but I want to kind of concentrate on what Mike Saint said, because we have had this gargantuan battle there amongst people who are all into sustainability at loggerheads on money for really cool, sustainable transportation projects and then money for widening this damn freeway, Highway 1 in rush hour. I don't know if you all have ever experienced that parking lot. And there are better ways to do it, and we need to find those better ways. There's kind of a deal that was made where money has been allocated, but the RTC, Regional Transportation Commission, is going to come crying to you folks asking for money, expecting to get money to build those auxiliary lanes, and there is no good justification for the reasons that Mike Saint just cited. The only possible justification is that it's supposed to increase safety, but it won't. So there are a whole host, and one of which hasn't been mentioned yet, but we got jump bikes just like you folks do here now. We're apparently only four cities in the country that have this, the electric bikes that are shared. I used to say for a tenth of the cost of the eighth of $1 billion you want to spend on widening the freeway, you could just buy everybody electric bikes. Well, they've essentially done that, and it's a lot more manageable because those people don't own it. They're not responsible for the bikes. The company is, and it's working wonderfully. Thousands of people are using them. Each bike gets many rides per day. We need to expand that countywide and all over the state, and with innovative solutions like that and the PRT, which I was into long before even Brett was. I kind of helped bring him into that, but anyway, go PRT, solar-powered PRT. That's future stuff, maybe not quite so far away as you might think. But anyway, I think my time's up, but thanks a lot for everything, and have at it.
Good afternoon. My name is Ella Wise, the State Policy Associate from Climate Plan, a network of more than 50 organizations statewide working on creating more healthy, sustainable, and equitable communities. We're really excited by the opportunity provided today, bringing together two powerful bodies in what I think is the fifth largest economy in the world or something like that recently. One is managing billions of dollars for our transportation system, and the other is leading the world in climate policy. And I'm so excited by the discussion today, prioritizing VMT reduction and the need for land use and housing change. As staff presented, the state's goal is clear. We need to reduce transportation emissions, and the scoping plan lays out the path to get there. As already said, in addition to ambitious adoption of alternative vehicles and fuels, we also need ambitious VMT reduction. It's our job to invest in a transportation system that makes it easy and affordable for all Californians to live a healthy and sustainable life. Already, ARB, CTC, and the regions have made progress towards this goal, but as we've discussed, it's not nearly enough. And we've distributed a fact sheet on transportation spending that shows our decisions and the policies that govern those decisions perpetuate business as usual. And today, I feel the energy in the room that we're ready for change. In the past, we invested in a transportation system that required everyone to own a car. In the past, we invested in a transportation system based on Californians driving long distances whenever you needed to get somewhere. In the past, the needs of low-income families and communities of color were ignored. In the past, we let freight pollute our communities. No longer. It's time to shift dollars away from highway expansion, which, as my colleagues have already said, just subsidized driving, to invest in transit, biking, walking, and to make those sustainable transportation options an attractive option, and to pair those investments with strong anti-displacement policies. This requires examining and shifting both our investments and the regulations that guide the investments. Recent research from UC Davis supports the findings in this fact sheet. And I just want to join with colleagues that we are asking for an interagency work group to continue the momentum from this meeting to talk about productive policy decisions that can lead up and be prepared for the December meeting. Thanks very much.
Hello, my name is Jared Sanchez. I'm with the California Bicycle Coalition, also known as CalBike. I think, like Dr. Sperling, I have been anticipating this meeting quite a bit. I've been on the job for about a year and a half, and I think early on I quickly saw that disconnect, and I'm really happy about the conversations that have been happening today. I think they're going in a really positive direction. Thank you for ARB and CTC staff for being able to organize this conversation, although it's already been noted that it's mandated, but I'm glad that we're all getting on the same page and really fulfilling some of those goals that we've all talked about. I just want to take a minute to talk about a letter that Cal Bike and other organizations submitted to the docket and signed on to around transportation justice. You may ask what transportation justice is. I think it's really set out clearly in the letter, so hopefully you were briefed on that, and if you weren't, just take some time to read that. In the document, we provide some definition of that and what it means, I guess, in terms of what environmental justice is and what ARB has already well established into their agency, including the two appointed seats for EJ representation, which has been nothing but a positive step in that. So we submitted the letter. We're also going to be submitting some principles and some very specific action steps around what transportation justice is, just to basically lay it out. There's certainly benefits and burdens to the transportation system, which includes, of course, the air pollution, GHG, and all the other burdens that disproportionately placed on low-income communities, communities of color. There's certainly plenty of benefits that are being implemented as well, including which is exactly the access and mobility question. So it's really taking two sides of the equation and not just focusing on the burden side, but of course focusing on access and mobility and just as an important piece of the puzzle there. Just to end up, of course, we are in full support of all the talk around VMT reduction, GHG reduction, zero emissions freight, with certainly alignment with those discussions, and as we see it, transportation justice really underlies all of that, as you can see in the document that we submitted and also the forthcoming principles, which hopefully will be helpful to you all. Just to point out two specific things as I wrap up about some further coordination is, one real quick is the low-income barriers study for clean transportation, which was led by ARB and just finalized this year. It's a great document that assigns roles and responsibilities to both agencies, including others. And as just mentioned by Ella, this idea around an interagency work group would be a great start and to include public members like ourselves and others to that table for future coordination. So thank you.
Good afternoon, Erica Rincon on behalf of PolicyLink. We are also very excited to see the CTC and ARB come together in these joint meetings. We do believe that they represent an important opportunity to really discuss and act on how the state can better address our climate, mobility, and equity goals through strengthening the administrative practices that you lead in both of your agencies and also implementing policies that can really support action and funding toward these goals. We were also one of the undersigned organizations on the transportation justice letter, and I also wanted to express our support for the recommendations outlined in the VMT reduction letter submitted by Climate Resolve and Climate Plan and the Zero Emissions Freight Infrastructure letter submitted by the Center for Community Action and Environmental Justice. The focus of our work and interests really lie in all the different priorities that were laid out in the transportation justice letter, and I just wanted to lift up a couple pieces of that. One area is that we hope that through this joint coordination, we can really have a deeper conversation and figure out a way to advance policies that strengthen the public participation process for marginalized communities so that they can better engage in the decision-making processes with regard to transportation investments that are impacting their communities, as we see far too often their voices very much absent from the conversations and the decision-making processes. We also support discussing and advancing strategies that not only make our transportation system more equitable at the state level, but that we figure out how to do that at the regional level. And we do believe that the state should take a stronger role in this regard. And lastly, I just wanted to mention that we welcome the opportunity to also discuss how we can better increase access to economic opportunity through targeting all the different transportation jobs and careers that are created within this sector to our communities that are experiencing the highest rates of unemployment and poverty. Thank you so much for these joint meetings, and we look forward to working with you in the months ahead.
A little public service message. Move the mic back in the other room over there. When people are talking, it sounds like an attack. It's coming out so garbled at times. So hopefully this spot will get you what you need. We've been dealing with it for, you know, an hour and a half now, so 2 hours. So that's eating up my time. Anyway, my name is Kevin Hamilton. I'm the executive director of Central California Asthma Collaborative. I, too, am thrilled by this, huge supporter of AB 179. Anything that brings the agencies together more constructively is going to be a win from my perspective. You're asking about tangible things that you could do. I think short term you could form a committee with membership from the CEC, from the CTC, and from ARB. And certainly the big tent the supervisor recommended would bring the housing folks into that. I think the first thing you should do is take a look at a little something called the Greenhouse Gas Scoping Plan. And through that lens and the lens of the State Transportation Plan and CEC Strategic Plan, lay those documents out side by side with staff and really need some members from these commissions and boards to be on that same committee to show that level of commitment and interest and to see where they align and, more importantly, where they don't. And how we resolve those places where they don't and help them both fit together more strategically and more strategically utilize the really limited assets that we have available in the state to solve this huge problem that we have around transportation, housing, climate equity, and just fix this once and for all. Because as long as these plans sit as outliers in their various silos, you're working to that plan. Your staff is working to those plans. So regardless of what happens here and everybody comes together, feels great about it, I do, certainly, not being facetious, but if something's going to get done, it has to get done through the lens of the plans you've committed to being the backbone of your work in this state. So that's a substantive thing that you could do in the next year, I would say, if you were to sit down and get after it. Develop a report from that with some recommendations about some reconciliation there. The energy folks have SB 350. ARB has, the list goes on, right? 375, 1550, 197, I mean, 617, 398, I don't know. I could just start at one and work my way up. You folks also from transportation side have SB 1 now. That guides how you have to spend those investments. Again, you're going to have to work through these plans that you've already been mandated to use. You've approved. Your commissions and boards have approved them. Let's take those, distill them, and come up with a single plan that works for all Californians. Thank you.
Public service.
You're welcome.
Good afternoon, Chairs Nichols and Inman, board members and commissioners. I brought three items before you today, but the latter two apply only to the ARB, and I entrust them to Chair Nichols to follow up, please. And I'll just read this quickly. My name is Kevin Hall. I'm from Fresno. I'm with Valley Climate. And I'm just going to read to keep it sweet. Both bodies here today are quite familiar with the human health risks associated with close proximity to major roadways. And while neither agency has direct land use authority over adjacent uses, Caltrans does regularly sell remnant parcels created by new freeway construction and existing freeway expansion. The comprehensive review of scientific literature cited in the ARB's guiding document, the May 2017 Technical Advisory, Strategies to Reduce Air Pollution Exposure Near High-Volume Roadways, includes 236 specific citations. Unfortunately, the Fresno-based work of ARB board member Dr. Balms and his colleagues, titled Ambient Air Pollution Impacts Regulatory T-Cell Function in Asthma, did not find its way into the advisory, at least not directly. It was published in 2010, and the lead author is Dr. Carrie Nadeau of the Stanford University School of Medicine. A unique meteorological feature of Fresno and much of the San Joaquin Valley is our stagnant air pattern. The diurnal patterns that disperse pollution in other air basins are much weaker in our region during much of the summer, fall, and winter months. This leads to many more hours of exposure and associated increased health risks than in other parts of the state. This joint meeting of both bodies in the presence of ARB board members Dr. Balms and Dr. Sheriffs offers CTC commissioners a great opportunity to learn more from the experts and ideally would lead the commission to direct staff to further research the issue and return with a policy recommendation regarding the sale of remnant parcels. Specifically, Caltrans should consider attaching restrictive covenants to the parcels it sells, which would forbid the placement of parks, senior living centers, and other uses that house or attract sensitive receptors. Thank you very much for your time.
Hello. My name is Yolanda Park, and I am the Environmental Justice Program at Catholic Charities of the Diocese of Stockton, and I thank you very much for this opportunity to speak to you all today. It's hot outside, so I'm glad to be inside. I think these joint meetings are a great opportunity, and it's very exciting that we can all come together on these issues of equity, health, and air quality, and transportation, especially for our most vulnerable communities. I appreciate that the CTC and ARB understand that adding road capacity is not the answer to reducing air pollution or VMT. However, this message really needs to be made loud and clear at the local and regional level. Unfortunately, there are COG staff and board members in the Valley who do not share the same concerns regarding VMT and do not consider VMT reduction as coinciding with GHG reduction or being a part of it. This also tends to include City Council as well. The RTP SES does not have any teeth for enforcement. Often our biggest argument that advocates can make is how a good RTP SES has a better shot at getting funding. We hope that this will be addressed. Displacement is another issue. Therefore, we hope to see investments in sustainable mobility modes accompanied by robust strategies to minimize these displacement pressures. I invite you to consider the framing document titled More Choices, Less Traffic, Achieving Greater Efficiency and Equity from California's Transportation Investments, and the fact sheet assessing California's transportation spending titled New Goals, Old Thinking, California's Climate Goals and Transportation Dollars. We hope to see the establishing of an interagency work group or advisory committee to continue working on these issues in the interim between these joint meetings, inclusive of public stakeholders. Please don't hesitate to reach out to us. We always welcome the opportunity to work with you. Thank you.
Good afternoon. Thanks for the opportunity to address this joint meeting. My name is Joel Espino. I'm Environmental Equity Legal Counsel with the Greenlining Institute. We've been advocating for racial and economic justice in California for 25 years. I'll open with quoting social justice activist and poet Audre Lorde. There is no such thing as a single issue struggle because we do not live single issue lives. I open with this because I want to emphasize a theme many have commented on today. These two bodies collectively are charged with addressing many entrenched and complex problems. And so increasingly, we need agencies to implement interdisciplinary strategies and actions that promote happy, healthy, and proper, prosperous lives for all, regardless of race or income. An easy way to do this is to leverage the spending power of both of these agencies to promote inclusive and equitable economic opportunities. People will build and maintain infrastructure and technologies, and projects will need materials and services. To ensure these two bodies help fight California's affordability crisis, we need to make sure our most vulnerable people and most diverse businesses can benefit most from these economic opportunities. I know both bodies are doing work around these topics, and we commend that. And at the same time, there is a great opportunity to do more. Greenland looks forward to working with the California Air Resources Board and California Transportation Commission and with our partners here to reform our transportation sector to make sure it is more fair and just. Thank you for your time.
Good afternoon. Matthew Baker with Planning and Conservation League. Happy to be here. At the risk of sounding redundant, I would like to emphasize a few points that came out of the Climate Resolve framing document that was provided to you and have certainly been talked a lot about today, points speaking to the question of why VMT reduction is so important. I think it is important to be repetitive on these points, that even though it may be redundant for this group, it's many of the venues that I operate in, it is not at all redundant, and I think it needs to be better expressed. VMT reduction is certainly at the nexus between transportation planning and land use planning. It has not only become the primary metric for gauging greenhouse gas emission reductions from better land use, more compact, smarter land use, and providing more transportation choice, but it has also become a very good proxy metric for all of the co-benefits that to public health and social equity and natural resource conservation that improved land use and transportation choice provides. But on the climate question in particular, you know, it is as extremely important as zero emission vehicles and clean energy are to reaching our climate goals, as ARB staff has found in their scoping plan and reported earlier. Electrification of vehicles and clean energy are not alone going to meet our climate goals. We still need significant amounts of VMT reduction from improved land use and transportation choice. Tailoring our transportation investments to achieve this VMT reduction, I think, is really one of the central challenges before us right now. And we are very excited to see this cross-agency meeting begin to address these challenges, and we look forward very much to working with you in the coming months and years to help find some of those solutions. Thank you.
Good afternoon, board members and commissioners. Esther Postiglione with California Walks. I just want to start off by thanking you all for your time and being here. I know we're here because we have to be, but it's great to see everyone in the room. I also really appreciate all the effort that went in by staff at ARB and at CTC with preparing the presentations and framing the dialogue for today. Something that I'm really hopeful and glad to hear from today's meeting was this interest in alignment of programs and investments for positive transportation, climate, air quality, and equity outcomes, and I think that's really great. I think echoing what some of our partners have said already, this is something we'd love to move towards with a particular interest in diving more into mobility justice, as our partners at CalBike and PolicyLink said, as well as zero emission goods transport, and of course VMT reduction, and as CalWalks with an emphasis of course in active transportation, we'd love to see that shift in modes. And I think that all of these things together will help us reach our state goals. So I'm really hopeful in hearing some of that dialogue today that we can get there together. I think another thing that I'll echo from our partners is just the benefit that we see not just in these joint meetings, but also in hopefully creating a space where we have an interagency work group that's open to some of our public stakeholders and members to be a part of this process, especially given the 6 months till the next joint meeting. It'd be great to have a lot of the partners here in the room at the table to help inform and share information that we have. You know, of course, here you've heard a lot of comments from experts on VMT reduction, on mobility justice, and on, you know, zero emission good transport. And I think it'd be great to have these people in the room to help talk about those issues in advance of the December meeting. So again, thank you so much for your time and for allowing this time for public comment. Thank you so much.
Hopefully this is not an attack to people in the overflow room. So my name is Chanel Fletcher, and I am the director of Climate Plan. As Ellen noted, we are a network of over 50 nonprofit organizations working together to advance healthy, sustainable, and equitable communities. I heard a couple of commissioners kind of share their confusion at the intent of this bill. As a co-sponsor, I just want to read to you a quote that sparked this idea for us a couple of years ago. And this quote is actually from the 2014 State Smart Transportation Initiative, which was actually commissioned by the California State Transportation Agency. And it says, "Nor is Caltrans, or for that matter, the State Transportation Agency, or the CTC, a major player in ensuring the regions are moving towards lower VMT development as envisioned in SB 375, even though much of the work done in the region is funded through state STIP monies. So again, this is not a report that we did. This is actually a report that was commissioned by the State Transportation Agency. And when we read that in 2014, we weren't thinking as an attack on the CTC. It wasn't an attack on the regions. It wasn't an attack on Caltrans. I think I worked with all folks at those agencies and have a ton of respect for what they do. We saw it as it could either be A, a challenge, or B, an opportunity. We think it's a huge opportunity. And one of the reasons why we co-sponsored this bill was because we thought it would be a great chance for ARB and CTC to come together, to learn from one another, build strong relationships, and start thinking about what we need to do to achieve our climate goals, our transportation goals, while improving the quality of life for all Californians. We are excited about this first meeting and future meetings, and really excited to start thinking about what can we do and how do we need to do it to get to both our transportation goals and to our climate goals. We stand in strong support with our fellow advocates that you've heard talking about VMT reduction and transportation justice, and we would love to continue to be a partner with you through that interagency work group if possible. If not, we are happy to continue meeting with CTC staff, ARB staff, and also ARB board members and CTC commissioners. Thank you so much.
Good afternoon. I'm Bill McGavern with the Coalition for Clean Air, and I agree with comments many of my colleagues have made about VMT reduction and transportation justice, so I will not repeat those. I did notice there was a white paper that came out earlier this year from the National Center for Sustainable Transportation called Aligning California's Transportation Funding with Its Climate Policies. And they say in this paper, this exploration reveals that the state framework for funding transportation is largely disconnected from its transportation-related climate goals and that its ambitious climate objectives are not fully reflected in its practices for allocating transportation revenue. So I really hope that that's something that all of you here can fix, probably along with the governor and the legislature. I can remember a time when people were saying that SB 375 was going to fix that, and it really has not. And it really, as a law, it just does not have the strength to do that. And so I appreciated Professor Sperling's comment earlier. I agree, the SCSs have been too weak to accomplish what we need to accomplish. And so I think we do need higher targets in SB 375, but we also need stronger tools, period, than that tool. And also, this paper that I quoted from talks about climate, but it is equally important to align our air quality standards with transportation funding. And I remind you that our air quality standards under the Federal Clean Air Act subject us to obligations to come into attainment, and one of the punishments if we do not attain clean air is to lose federal transportation dollars. So something that we all need to do is to make sure that transportation projects are contributing to making our air cleaner and not dirtier. And I think one model for that is the multi-agency Sustainable Freight Action Plan, and that all transportation projects should follow the guiding principles of that plan. I also appreciated Commissioner Alvarado's comments about the potential for automation to drive up vehicle miles traveled. I'm very concerned that in the absence of shared mobility, that will happen. And it will also, in the absence of electrification, will also lead to increased emissions. And finally, I just wanted to say, I know that as state officials, you are constrained in what you can say about ballot measures, but I'm not. So I will say that we need to make sure we're not going backward, and the Coalition for Clean Air opposes the ballot measure which would repeal the revenues associated with SB 1. Thank you.
Good afternoon. Linda Kamushin with the California Bicycle Coalition. I want to appreciate everyone's time, effort, and energy for bringing this meeting together. I want to echo the voices of my colleagues And the suggestions that has been presented today, we do like to see that in the short term, to get us to the December meeting, to have this work group where we can be involved in the process of highlighting our priorities. I want to give appreciation for the level of sophistication that this conversation has brought up in a way that I really haven't seen before, honestly. And so thank you for your acknowledgement of the issues and also effort towards reaching a quality of life that we really need to see. I want to recognize that we've all been sitting here for 3 hours, and I want you to feel what it feels like in your body and compound that by ailments and stresses and children that you're worried about. And that's what people have to go through every day, day in and out, when they're getting to and from work, wherever they're going. We've really, these crises that we talk about, they didn't happen overnight. You know, they're decisions made piece by piece, meeting by meeting, that really compound over time. And so how can we be more deliberate? How can we be more intentional? And how do we bring in the expertise that we all have to really show that we care, not just for the economy, which is important, and we know that we need to uphold that, but also for the well-being of everyone in California and for their day-to-day experience, and so that they can get behind such efforts when it becomes critical. Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Bruce Griesenbeck. I'm from the Sacramento Area Council of Governments, and I want to thank Assemblymember Cervantes and others for getting us to this point. I also want to thank Chair Nichols and Director Branson for your work and your staff's work in assembling a great program for today. And thanks to the assembled commissioners and board members for just your engagement in the conversation today. It was really inspiring. The word golden opportunity came up several times, and we do think that this process is a golden opportunity to get better alignment between the longer range plans and the shorter range programs and the investments that are being made in transportation to leverage that and get better outcomes in terms of all the things that we want to accomplish in terms of economic prosperity, reducing congestion, reducing greenhouse gases, and getting a more equitable and prosperous world for all of us. So definitely want to echo that. Really appreciate the emphasis. I wanted to give a little bit of a heads up. In our next SES, a big priority for our region will be how do we leverage our transportation investments to get more economic development, more economic prosperity, and at the same time address some of the equity issues that are present in our region. So appreciate those comments from the commissioners and board members here. Housing affordability came up in many different ways. And in our region, we have a lot more in common on the housing, on the cost of developing and the difficulty of developing housing with the coastal communities. But we have incomes more and an economy that's more in common with the Central Valley. So we have low housing production and high cost burden, especially in lower income households. We do want to find a way to leverage our SES to solve that problem, and we'd appreciate this collected group's help in doing that. And then finally, I wanted to say something about innovation. I really appreciate the comments that on housing, particularly Commissioner Dunn and Board Member Cerna. Appreciate your comments on some of the obstacles that there are to housing production. On innovation, I definitely wanted to thank Board Member Sperling and Commissioner Guardino and others for their comments on the need for innovation. Transportation is innovating very, very quickly. And I think our planning and our funding processes are probably not innovating as quickly. My executive director, James Corliss, was before the CTC to talk about one of our innovation programs, Civic Labs. Stay tuned. There's more to come on that, but we can't get in the way of innovation as we do this. Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon, board members and commissioners. My name is Gracia Lenis. I work for Leadership Council for Justice and Accountability, a local nonprofit based in the Central Valley and the Eastern Coachella Valley, working directly with low-income communities in disadvantaged areas to ensure that their priorities are elevated at the local, regional, and statewide levels, and you know, working on a host of issues, including transportation and climate goals, which brings me here today. And you know, we have a really great opportunity to unite and collaborate, not just between these two instrumental agencies, but especially with our environmental justice communities, who are often an afterthought whenever we're having these conversations. You know, we must all work together to achieve California's ambitions, climate goals, and improve our community's environment, health, and transportation access. We're also used to working in these silos, but it's finally time to break down these walls and be more intentional about really working together and including all these you know, agencies, organizations, and especially community members, and meeting them where they're at. We have this opportunity to improve these existing programs and target existing funding sources so that they work for everyone, and again, especially for those who need it most. These programs must be improved so that they're inclusive and reflective of community priorities and their concerns, and the solutions oftentimes are best when they come out of community ideas, and they're the ones driving these solutions. So if we're like really serious about achieving our goals and improving our communities, we must meet with them where they're at. We must be able to go to the Central Valley, the Eastern Coachella Valley, LA, the Bay Area, everywhere, to ensure that everyone is being part of this conversation and we're not excluding anyone. Yeah, thank you. Appreciate it.
Hi, good afternoon. I'm Ryan Kenny with Clean Energy. We are the nation's largest provider of renewable natural gas transportation fuel, and we have been early and aggressive supporters of many programs at ARB, including the LCFS and sustainable freight. Our fuel, renewable natural gas, can be up to negative 270 CI. Our engines, low-NOx engines, are 99% cleaner than diesel. And, of course, our industry does contribute to the reduction of short-lived climate pollutants. I'm here to just remind everyone the value of low-NOx vehicles and renewable natural gas, and in relation to a short-term and long-term strategy on air quality and climate goals. Bill McGavern mentioned earlier federal attainment goals, and ARB's mobile source strategy document did call for 900,000 low-NOx vehicles by the year 2031. And we do believe that the industry has a role to play in meeting the federal attainment goals of 2023 and 2031. I also mentioned, too, that as the strategies are considered, we do ask that you consider the cost effectiveness of the vehicles as well. Electrification does have its place, but in the heavy duty space, it is taken far longer to come along. And the low NOx vehicles are a fifth to a tenth cheaper than electrified systems. We also ask that you consider all technologies, not picking winners and losers, and let all fuels compete to meet the respective goals. Thank you.
Good afternoon. I'm Rosa de Leon Park with the Stanislaus Council of Governments. Thank you for the opportunity to speak, Madam Chairs and Commissioners and Board Members. I just wanted to bring up to your attention also something that, you know, we're hearing all these comments about, and Bill Higgins, I think, spoke for the CalCOG, as we all, he represents most of the councils of governments, and I am a metropolitan planning organization, and also the regional transportation planning for the state mandates. But when we're talking about roads, when we're developing our regional transportation plans, a good road is necessary for, and especially in our area where we're more of an agricultural area, not all the regions are the same. So we have to take in perspective what is in our regions. First of all, we're a mix of a rural and urban area. So our roads are important. Having safe, you know, not having good interchanges that are safe for our goods and for the people that are living and driving in those areas are also very critical. health is important. Air quality is important in our area. We take all of those things in account. We work with all of our local agencies in our community. We also have developed other committees in our area to engage the health community, to be part of our planning process as we are developing our regional transportation programs. We're talking about the economy and prosperity of our region. We just passed a half-cent sales tax in our community, and we heard loud and clear of the residents that they wanted to improve their roads. So that's one thing, but they also wanted to have transit in other areas. So we have a pilot program that, thanks to the UC Davis that is supporting us on that program, it's also to help the disadvantaged communities to get to where they need to get, because transit is always not available on the rural areas of our region. So we are working with what we can, trying to make a balance. But it is important that we have improvement in our region and at all levels, and health is something that we take into consideration.
We have got a list of public speakers, which is great. We have as many people who came to speak to us as we have people here. So we've heard a lot, and it's all been positive and much appreciated. We do need, I think, to wrap up this meeting with a little bit of a sense of what happens next. And before we do that, I'd like to ask everybody to take, like, 1 minute to stand up and stretch, because I think we do need to do that. It's been a long time.
Take me out to the ball game.
Yeah, exactly. I'll do that. All right, that's enough. Oh, you didn't get... I could stretch some more, too. Yeah, good for you. Yes, I do.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's just get back together briefly, and then we can break up and socialize or whatever. Is there anybody among the group of board members, commissioners, if I may, get you back into your places again? Almost. We're close. We're very close, indeed. I always have to call on at least one person. Okay. Quiet. This is great. I believe we did not hear from every member of the boards or commissions who wanted to speak. I know you mentioned that we saw Mr. Van Kanenburg. Kadeinberg, sorry.
It's okay. We need to practice. So, thank you. And thank you for everyone who spoke today. For staff, as you prepare for the next meeting, I have two questions, and please don't take these questions as judgmental. They are without judgment. They are honest. We heard a lot of talk today about making a big push to reduce VMT. And Joe Jordan, I appreciated his comments. He came today in a solar-powered Chevy Volt. So if everyone was Joe Jordan, would reduction and had a zero emission vehicle, give me the breakdown of how that wouldn't, how we would, that would not meet, help us meet our greenhouse gas goals. So walk me through that one a little bit more in detail, because I'd like some more information on that. I think the second thing is, we had a lot of speakers who talked about that they didn't want to see any new capacity projects at all, and I don't know if they meant anywhere in the state or in their specific geographic location. That was not clear to me. But you've heard also a lot of areas of the state rely on goods movement as an integral part of their economy, and when their economy is more has more vitality, there's an increase in goods movement. You also heard, I also know that many areas are working on comprehensive corridor plans, and part of their comprehensive corridor plans is multimodal, but it also calls for capacity increases. Also, there are many self-help counties that have passed revenue measures that the voters have by more than two-thirds of the voters, because that's how those type of revenue measures must pass, call for specific capacity increasing projects. And SB1 has capacity increasing projects. So what I'd like to hear specifically is there agreement on staff level over that going forward capacity increases are going to be a part of it, or is there a notion that we are looking to, in certain areas, put brakes on capacity projects or in general capacity projects? I want to hear some real clarity on that, because obviously there were a lot of comments on that today, and I think I'd like to hear some clarity from before our next meeting on that. Okay? Thanks. Thank you. Lots again.
Those are an important to-do list, and I can commit ARB staff, because they know they've worked on a lot of these issues. I can't speak for CTC staff, but I think we could do a draft of something and make sure that at least they have an opportunity to see if we are in agreement, and if not, to highlight where the disagreements are.
We have a small but mighty staff. So.
Well, maybe that speaks to the next step, which is I heard a suggestion made early on that.
Excuse me, Chair Nichols. We have another.
Looked in the wrong direction.
Commissioner Arp.
No. I am in complete agreement with the comments, particularly that identify the value of this initial conversation, which was good. But the importance and the necessity of us taking the next meeting to a place where we can identify specific goals. When we start talking about housing, we can talk about housing all day, but if we're going to really talk about how we can really encourage a better nexus between housing, jobs, and transportation, we're going to be treading on some controversial ground, and everybody knows that we've, you know, it becomes political, and so we're going to have to do as Mr. Sperling says, and that is figure out what are attainable goals that we within our charged jurisdictions can do specifically. We're not going to change the world, but we could do some things that are pretty historic when it comes to agencies working together on very important issues: transportation, housing, jobs, environment, health. It doesn't get more important than that. So I think that there are things that we can do that will begin to at least approach those. And finally, my last thought is we heard a lot of feedback today from the environmental community, from the environmental justice, from alternative transportation advocates. And I commend them for being here and sitting through 3 hours, and I think that is important. We heard nothing, really, from the business community, mm-hmm. We heard nothing. We need to hear more from business, from labor, from those that are part of that. And I think we should probably find out why. We should probably do a little bit more outreach. Yeah, I'm not the chair, but.
That's right. We had Mr. Gavetti and then Mr. De La Torre.
I think I'm the only home builder in the room. And obviously, housing is in a crisis situation in the state of California. I want to applaud everyone who came to this meeting and all the speakers. I agree business needs to be more involved. I'd like to see more home builders involved so you really understand the problems that we're faced with in terms of getting entitlements in the right places to put the houses where we need the houses. And we've built transit systems in the Bay Area where we have municipalities that will refuse to open up their properties for development. And that's where the housing should go, where we can put it on existing transit systems that we've already paid for. Caltrain is one of them. We had the fellow from Santa Rosa, the smart train we just invested in, as well as BART in the East Bay. So I would like to see housing become more involved in this group so we can talk about it, because if we don't put all those pieces of the puzzle together, we'll never solve the problems that we've been talking about today. Thank you.
Hector?
Oh,
there you go.
That's a really good place for it. goods movement, the sustainable freight strategy, we both were part of that process. It just makes sense to pick up where that left off and work together, whatever our next steps are. Mm-hmm. It just makes sense to pick up where that left off and see where we can come up with some collaborative efforts there. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, Judy.
That a lot of the speakers that came forward made references to forming an interagency subcommittee group, which I think is a smart idea. There's so much to work on. I know everybody's busy. I don't know who has time to do this, but I think it makes some sense, since our meetings are twice a year and spread out, that perhaps an interagency subgroup could take on the task of working out some details of the topics that we choose we want to work on together. So one thing we heard a lot about was VMT reduction. That's a big topic. But I'm suggesting it's a topic that we might consider taking on because it encompasses a lot of different areas that go across the borders of what we both work on, transportation and air quality. We mentioned that autonomous vehicles are the up-and-coming thing. And there's a concern, as Mr. Alvarado said, about that increasing VMT. I think that's a true concern. But I think there are innovative ways to deal with that. And it's something I think is right on the horizon that we probably ought to start looking at and develop some sort of policies around before it gets away from us. So that's another area that I think is really important, and it also then fits into that envelope of VMT reduction. So those are some initial thoughts I have about what we heard today.
Anybody else? Okay. Seeing no more hands up, suggestion for what to do next, which is each of us have staff who can speak to the individual board members and canvass them following this meeting. We've got notes taken as well as a transcript, so we can distill a lot of what we heard, but I think it's important that we regroup through our executive officers and as chairs and get back to you with a proposal or proposals about what to do next, not just in terms of an agenda for a meeting, but also of what could be done between now and the next meeting to engage those members of the two boards and commissions that are able and willing to throw themselves into this a little bit further. I heard a number of people who seemed like they were willing to volunteer for some further work, so I certainly don't want to not take advantage of that. But is that acceptable from your perspective?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a good step. I think there was so much dialogue here, and I really appreciate everybody participating. I think to Commissioner Arp's position, there are also a lot of folks that weren't here. And we could grow the tent way beyond whatever, but still realistically, to Commissioner Gomez and other thoughts, you know, we need to. I think also to Board Member De La Torre's mention of the model of the three-legged stool we mm-hmm. had for sustainable freight. I think it's a good framework for all of us. I don't believe we'll ever finish that because I think the freight sector is so dynamic, and but we have to keep going. And we all know collectively, I may be the only person that serves on advisory boards or advisory committees on all three legs, but happy to do that. And I think that it is an important topic for all of us, because while we look at the vehicle miles traveled, clearly our freight sector plays a role in that and can maybe, you know, I think planning early and often is going to be important to how we address that. So I would just, the only suggestion I would make, Chair Nichols, is that maybe we include our vice chairs just, you know, in our executive director and our chair and vice mm-hmm. chair, just because, you know, it seems to me a lot of work to be done.
We'll help. We could use the help.
Yeah.
Vice Chair Berg is often volunteered by me for the really tough assignments, so that would be great.
Okay, then we just delegate. You and I will go to the pool.
Exactly. Yeah, I think that's right. I would just comment on one thing, because I heard a lot of interest on the part of the people who were here today from the public in being more involved in some way or another in this new joint process. And I think it's important. We certainly today, I think, have modeled, you know, how we do a good public meeting. But if we really were going to start to get involved in developing, let's say, action plans or documents, we probably are going to be then subject to all of the requirements mm-hmm. for the Open mm-hmm. Meetings mm-hmm. Act for those mm-hmm. bodies too. So we just need to think about what we're really taking on, because as was pointed out, not everybody who's interested in this issue was here. So, but there may be some mm-hmm. workshop kinds of things that we can do that would be a little more informal and still allow mm-hmm. for people who want to be involved to get involved. Any other business to come before this body today?
Okay, thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
And we will have our first adjournment. So
here we go.
Here we go.
All right, we are adjourned. Thanks, everybody.